have a warn you people. Starship Rokan Show off for another week of broadcast insolence. Thank you all for being here. Thanks to everyone for putting up with us on Friday. I hate to look backwards, but some wacky things happened on Friday, and we promise we won't do that again. That's all I'm going to say about that. Now, coming up on the program today, we got Ben Bradley's going to join us this hour, talking about the 1976 murder in Downers Grove has been solved. People might remember this, the Pamela Maurer murder, for people who are from the western suburbs. It was a big, infamous thing. And then, also in this hour, the Kennedy cap might be coming back. Now, you're thinking to yourself, now, what is that? That sounds like something political. No, that is a park that they're going to build over the Kennedy Expressway downtown. It's all going to go underground. And then we're going to be able to swing on swings and play soccer with ourselves.
Over the semi-trucks?
Right. Oh. Like, instead of going to, like, having to cross over the Kennedy to get from the loop to the West Loop, you're now going to have a park that you have to drive around as opposed to...
Oh, goody.
Right, exactly. I mean, I love when this city decides that it has to have solutions to problems we didn't think we had. Right?
While not fixing the real problems.
Right. We got real problems. We don't need, thank you, Lauren Lapka.
You're welcome.
I don't think that I need to have that problem solved right now, or you need to have that problem solved, or any of us. If you're on the Kennedy right now, I just want you to think about this. If you're on the Kennedy and you are heading, I don't know, I think this thing's going to start somewhere in the loop. So let's just guess, because I will have exact details here, but let's just guess from the Eisenhower Exchange. Right?
Burn interchange.
To what do we call that officially?
Burn interchange.
The burn interchange. Thank you. I like when it's things that I've been calling, you know, the exact same thing for 100 years. Change your names, and I never keep up. I do that with relatives too. I don't care who you married. You're still Smith to me. You always will be. Anyway, the point is that you get, if you're starting at the burn exchange. Interchange, and you go up to, I'm going to say probably Ohio, for at least Ohio. Think of you now being in a tunnel for that period of time. What happens in tunnels? I ask you. Have you ever gone in or out of Manhattan in a tunnel? You ever been in a really long tunnel before? You like tunnels? You like even the Hubbard Cave. We have to call it cave because we don't want to call it a tunnel because tunnel sounds too scary.
Well, yeah. Have you seen any action movie? All those chases go down tunnels.
Right. We don't want tunnels.
No, we don't want those car chases.
No, and they want to do the same thing on Lakeshore Drive. Now, that's a little shorter, and I kind of get what they're going for there, and maybe that would work. But we're talking about a multi, you know, you're talking about maybe a two-mile tunnel. I'm going to tell you right now, not for me.
I don't know. Blocking all that unsightly traffic is definitely the most pressing issue for me here in Chicago Row. All those West Loop residents in their million-dollar condos have to watch cars drive by on the highway. We need to cap this thing off.
Because when they moved in, Kevin Powell, and I do like this, when they moved in to the West Loop, that expressway wasn't there, was it? Yes, it was! It's like when the people complain about night baseball at Wrigley Field, I'm like, unless you...
What's all that noise down the street? Well, there's a professional baseball team just a couple blocks away.
You can't park anywhere.
What?
Yes.
Nobody told me.
Unless you are 120 years old,
you can't complain.
You have nothing to complain about, because that park has been there your whole life, your parents' whole life, perhaps your grandparents' whole life. Shut up! All right. Anyway, we have a lot. I clearly have a lot of passion about this.
I'm glad they're addressing this pressing issue.
Nobody asked. Nobody asked. Except I'm sure there's some guy who's a cousin to somebody else who's got an uncle who works for the city who's got a cousin who happens to know a lobbyist who has some dirt on somebody who's going to say, you know, we need the bill. You know, this is about a $1 billion.
Buh.
billion-dollar project that we got to do over by here, and it's it would be sad if Wright found out about that thing.
My cousin's got to watch these cars drive by. He doesn't like it.
Your mouth is managing to sound more full and more full by the end of the sentence.
Right, because it's filling with venom. That's why. All right, thank you very much. We have got coming up. Oh. Birds don't like it either. Ben Bradley's going to join us in the WGN TV newsroom coming up to talk about this. And then, of course, they will start with the 1979 murder that's just been solved in Downers Grove. And the baseball story in the 4 o'clock hour, I know. If you could come back for that, that'd be great. This is unbelievable. This is one of the most significant moments in Major League Baseball of this century, for sure. And maybe in the history of the game, this cheating scandal. And you stop and you think, well, are all these teams cheating by stealing the signs? Is that what they're all doing? But the problem here is how the Houston Astros did this and why they're firing the management of the Houston Astros today. The manager, the general manager, and God knows who else's heads are going to roll, and who knows how much is going to reverberate through baseball. So that comes your way in the 4 o'clock hour. Just come back for that for sure. Right now, let's check in with Lauren Lapko. What's happening on the roads, which I like the way they are, sort of, and the skies.
For news at 10, watch WGN, Micah Mater, Joe Donlin, Dan Rohn, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For TV news at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN.
Rokan Show right here. 720 WGN. That's Kevin Powell on the sports, Lauren Lapko on the traffic, and Ben Bradley for the WGN TV newsroom. He's your principal anchor at 4 p.m.
On the trumpet as well.
Right. And Ben joins us right now from the WGN headquarters.
Happy Monday to
you guys.
On
Bradley Place, no relation. Thank you very much. I know you were off for a couple of days, yes. And you sustained an injury on your vacation, I saw. So I hope that you're better now.
Thank you.
You ran an ankle into something?
Yes, we were. My wife and I took a little vacation together, as we try to do every so often. And the resort in Mexico we were staying at was pretty spread out, and they had bikes, for you to take from your room to the lobby to the restaurants to the pool to the beach, etc. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a nice and charming idea around noon, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's later in the evening. It gets a little more challenging.
Yeah, it gets dark.
Yeah, it's
and you're tired.
Yes.
You know, you're tired.
Yeah, it's from a long day of travel.
Yeah, sometimes the sand gets blown across concrete there, and it gets slippery.
All of a sudden, the sidewalks are curvy instead of straight.
True.
I don't know how that happens.
That's right.
And they must use a different stone when cobbling the sidewalks.
I see.
There was a speed bump.
You had a spill, and then you you survived though. Did you have to go to an emergency room in Mexico?
Well, it's funny you say that. So as I'm like sprawled out on my back, essentially in the driveway of this massive resort, a couple of the workers came by. I'm thinking I'm going to get run over by like an airport shuttle or something. And a couple of the workers, come running over to help me. And do you need to go to the hospital, sir? I'm like, no.
Hell no.
If I'm bleeding out, I'll hold it. I'll wait.
Yeah. No mas.
So, yes. No, they were very nice. They gave me some crutches, so I hobbled around the rest of the vacation.
Crutches, did they compress it with anything? Did you get like an ace bandage or any of those kinds of things?
They did give me an ace bandage. Right. Okay. I found vodka also helped with the swelling.
You pour it on, right? You pour it right on the wound itself?
Then the next day, as clearly I had been written up in some sort of like employee overnight note, like passing
or
from one
the resort
to the
newspaper.
Yes, because wherever I would go, there were Snickers, and I don't mean the candy bar. And there were lots of laughing and pointing by the staff.
Right.
But thankfully, there was an orthopedist from Loyola University Medical Center.
We met
near the pool, and so he said it's not broken. So just hobble around and get help when you get back to America.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. All right.
So.
All right. Now, let's talk. We got two
I'm
things
sure
to
I'll get
about.
My copay in just a little bit. Yeah.
Two things to discuss here. One, which is a very serious story, this 1976 murder case from Downers Grove. She was a high school student, Pamela Maurer. She was murdered. Big controversy about who did it, and did they have the right people or they didn't have the right people. Now, here we are, 44 years later.
To the week after she died.
We have an answer.
Yes, Bob Berlin, the DuPage County State's Attorney, announcing today that through DNA evidence and testing, that they have been able to determine that Pam Maurer's murder was carried out by Bruce Lindahl, who lived in Aurora at the time. Now, interestingly, Mr. Lindahl himself is now deceased. He died in 1991 while stabbing a Naperville man. He apparently, while repeatedly stabbing this guy out in Naperville, accidentally stabbed himself and died. But as tragic as all this is, the DuPage County State's Attorney thinks there may be more victims. The Daily Herald says he's suspected of killing an Aurora woman who was set to testify against him in a rape trial, and that this guy is also a suspect in the rape and disappearance of a teenager from Downers Grove many years ago.
Wow.
So what they're doing now is, thankfully, police who investigated this back 44 years ago, and Lyle and Woodridge, did a good job of processing any evidence and holding on to DNA evidence. And as the technology has improved over the years, originally they were able to narrow it down, and then they went and got a warrant and actually exhumed the suspect Lindahl's body and did further DNA testing and determined that they could connect him to Pamela Maurer's murder. And he's a suspect in these other cases. And they went so far today as to, put up pictures of him, talked about where he lived at the time, et cetera. And they said, if you know anything about a rape or about a murder or about anything that, you may have come across this guy before he died, we want to hear from you.
Wow. That's pretty incredible when you mm-hmm. stop and you think about it. Because, here you are, 44 years later, there's this answer. And again, how law enforcement technique and technology has changed so dramatically in this last half century that not only are you able to connect now with a much better degree of certainty than you were before, DNA, because the early days of DNA, they weren't. The real fingerprint wasn't being tested for, and that's why you had all these DNA positives that ended up on death row here in Illinois, which then resulted in the death penalty being suspended in Illinois because a third of the people that were on death row awaiting execution were exonerated through the DNA. So
the DNA determined somebody else did it. Yeah.
Right.
It wasn't as though there was DNA evidence against the guys who were locked up for the crimes.
Right. So it's
also not the catch-all that I think, criminal minds and law and order I want you to believe.
Right.
That, and police will tell you they're incredibly frustrated by how long it takes to get DNA processed in a whole lot of cases. And we've seen cases in one south suburb where there were rape kits that went untested for years and years and years. And that was, literally evidence left on a shelf. So I think while this does raise hopes that, one, law enforcement did a good job 44 years ago, and you had people who never forgot, and as advances in technology continued, that DNA from that case was entered into new databases and new searches were done. There's also some caution, I think, that's needed when people have these expectations. It's kind of like, though different, but these expectations that we have cameras everywhere now. So, boom, well, if it's caught on camera, solved. There's still an important role to play here for people to come forward.
Well, caught on camera isn't solved either.
That's my point, yeah.
All right, so
DNA is at least scientific, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. People go, hey, that's not me. Oh, that's not him. I mean, remember, the most famous case of that is R. Kelly. And the woman who was in the R. Kelly video.
Who said, nope, not me.
Who said, no, that's not me. And she was sitting right in the courtroom. And they could look at her. And the jury was like, oh, I guess not. Yeah. Well, there might have been some other things that were going on in that jury, too. But still.
But we've done stories where families are very upset because a loved one's murder takes place right underneath one of these pod cameras that the city of Chicago has, which, get sold and advertised as, catch-alls to crime. We did a story a couple of months ago where there was cell phone footage of a guy actually being shot and dying, 10 people around, and the family's, well, I don't understand. Why is the killer not locked up? Well, it's because those 10 people who were around refused to cooperate. So DNA certainly helps.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, at least it can exclude, and that's important, especially important for people who are sitting waiting execution. Right. They were. And what was it of that third that were taken off of death row? Half a dozen of them were just set free.
Yeah, right? I mean, it was a stunning moment in Illinois.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about this other story that got me a little animated early on. I am I'm a bit of an overreactor to things when we want to make massive changes in downtown Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of the Kennedy cap. Now, the Kennedy cap, not a political thing, the Kennedy cap.
Not a skull cap.
No, it is a covering, basically, over the Kennedy through downtown, the Kennedy Expressway through downtown, so that we can build another park. I had no idea that we needed one that was that long, yet that thin at the same time.
The hipsters have no place, from the Fulton Market, they have no place to sit, tight roll their jeans, and pet their chihuahuas.
Yes, they do. Actually, if you go to the Hubbard Street K, there's like a whole, like, there's a street over there. They could just, there's a parking lot near a Jewel. That, I could find them their own space. This seems like a really expensive proposition.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
and how?
I was going to say, well, Millennium Park is essentially the same thing, right? Those were for decades, railroad tracks that served as a dividing line and made it hard to get from Grant Park to the lakefront or from Michigan Avenue across.
Right.
And
well, that made sense because it was part of a park. You continue to park. You're not covering over the Kennedy. And what do they think they're going to do? First of all, a tunnel. I mean, how long is this thing going to be? Have you been?
Well, there's a cost per block. So I think they would probably only do a couple of blocks down near Randolph. The local alderman seems pretty supportive of it, Walter Burnett. The Kennedy, I don't know. I'm not as morally opposed as you seem to be to Parkland.
Right. It's almost a religious opposition that I have.
Well, I do not like fresh air.
No. We have.
You can still go down there and inhale, fumes from cars if you want.
Any real estate developer in this town will tell you that for every building that they build now, and there's cranes in the sky all over, there were tons of them before, there's still more going up, despite the fact that, at some point the economy is going to take a dip, just out of, natural gravity, economic gravity, and guys are still investing in those, putting those cranes up.
Yep.
And there will be a moment where, everybody who puts a crane up, they have to commit to a certain amount of outdoor space,
mm-hmm.
either on that property or somewhere else. So, I mean, the city is very vigilant about that.
But there's a difference between a strip of, a project and having a nice, beautiful park.
A nice beautiful park over the Kennedy.
Hater of Millennium Park and all
things outdoors. I don't
hate
Millennium Park. It's fine. It's out of my way. As long as it's out of my way, I'm good. I'm sorry to make it about me, but that just happens to be the case. Thank you, Ben.
Yes.
It was a great pleasure speaking to you. Welcome home, Ben.
Who would have thought? Rokan, hater of parks and fresh air. By the way, I'm excited to go out of town with you coming up in a little while here. You'll have to care for me when I fall and hurt myself on
that
trip.
Oh, my God. No, I thought I was going to be the trouble on that trip. All right, stand by. Thank you, Ben. All right, we'll get to the rest of that story, by the way. We're going to talk to the people who want to build that Kennedy cap coming up right after we do the news from the WGN Northwestern Medicine Newsroom with Kim Gordon. Rokan Show on 720 WGN. All right, we were talking about the Kennedy cap with... Actually, I've been complaining about it now for about 35 minutes. So we should find some people who actually know what they're talking about to discuss this with us. We have Scott Sarver with us, who is the was part of the design team, the original design team when they pitched this in 2012. And I appreciate you being with us, Scott. AIA Principal Architecture, Ratio Architecture, are the companies who were doing this. Let's, first of all, just to go back and explain what this is, this would be basically covering over a part of the Kennedy Expressway downtown to create a public park, right? That's the idea?
That's correct.
Okay. And how many blocks long of the Kennedy would this park take up or, statutory miles or whatever it is?
The park could be done incrementally, block by block, in between Monroe, Adams, et cetera, each of those blocks.
Would that cut off access
for
traffic going east-west?
No. The roads east-west would be maintained through there.
Okay. At ground level, or would they go underneath, too?
They would be at ground level. The expressway over there is recessed, and it creates kind of a chasm in our city. So we're not really, you know, it's not very comfortable to walk from Union Station over to the West Loop because we're crossing that expansive highway.
Now, so they would start with one block at a time and then see how far we get or how much money we've got left and how well it's going. Yeah. Is that the idea?
It could be executed incrementally, block at a time.
So it would be like the Hubbard Cave then, right? I mean, you just kind of go
except the area above it would be a public area.
Right, as opposed
public
to...
Park.
Yeah.
The best example would be Millennium Park. It's essentially very similar to those same four blocks, just moved to the west.
That's a nightmarish stretch for drivers, that few blocks there. What would be the impact?
Part of the concept originally was that the Circle interchange was being redone, which included removing the center access lanes on the Kennedy, which will require the bridges over there to be rebuilt, which is currently planned, so that the center access lanes can be moved to the perimeter.
So all those bridges over the Kennedy from basically the Eisenhower up to the Hubbard Cave are going to have to be rebuilt eventually anyway?
Moving north from the Circle interchange, they are planned to be rebuilt now.
Oh, my God. Really? What's more of that?
What's the timeline looking like if this were to actually get...
Hold on. I'm having trouble just accepting that. I mean, first of all, the Eisenhower, that whole, like, you know, term making... Awful. Whatever that is, the Circle interchange or the burn exchange, right, or whatever they call it now. I mean, that was supposed to be done 2 years ago. It's been...
They keep prolonging it. It's like the never-ending project.
Right. I've actually grown old, died, and been reborn since they started that project. So now, after that's all done, they're going to start tearing that stuff
up? Part of the same project that's currently going on.
Oh, my God. Wait. Do they have to take those bridges totally down? Didn't they do Adams already?
They might have.
Okay.
They might have, but the bridges will require, because they're getting rid of the center access lanes.
Oh, God.
Rose having a panic attack over the idea.
I thought I was just mad about this thing. Now this, you know what, Scott, this is good news. You actually made me happy about this, less happy about the fact that the bridges are all going to have to get redone.
You shouldn't be unhappy about this. I mean, if... You know, Millennium Park was kind of painful, and there were budget problems and on schedules and all the talking. But
that was train tracks.
It generated billions of dollars of tax revenue, yes, new properties, new jobs.
Yes, I agree. So. But that was over train tracks, not over that's the most traveled stretch of 3 miles of roadway every year, mm-hmm, between the Dan Ryan and the Kennedy. So basically between Roosevelt and Ohio. In the nation, as you know, because even at like midnight on Christmas Eve into Christmas Day, there is a backup as you're heading north. You know, when you make that turn to the west there, and then you kind of come back around and you head into like by Greektown, you're like, it's mm-hmm, always jammed up. How about you make it two levels of that?
No, this wouldn't, that traffic nightmare is, you know, it separates our city.
Okay, all right.
We've got a booming dynamic West Loop and, you know, the major metropolitan transportation train stations are on the other side and then the loop, and it's not really connected in a pedestrian way.
All right. Walking's overrated. Scott Sarver, thank you very much. I appreciate your time. AIA principal and architecture ratio architect. Thank you very much.
All right.
All right, there he goes. He was a good man to put up with us because he's the guy who came up with the design, and I'm pooping all over it. And that just didn't seem right, I think, to a lot of people.
I'm also reading here that if it weren't to work for the Kennedy, you know, there's a part of the Eisenhower near the medical district that looks pretty nice for them, too. So, you know, it's not necessarily going away.
Yeah. Oh, my God! All right, Lauren Lapko, why don't you give us the rest of the traffic and the weather? BroCon Show right here on 720 WGN. You know, it is Monday, and that means that we're giving away Blackhawks tickets. That's coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. Stay close for that. Your chance to win a pair of tickets, see the Hawks taking on the Jets on Sunday, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing for all the right reasons. Four Seasons. Find them online at fourseasonsheatingcooling.com and tune in every Monday all season long to win a pair of Chicago Blackhawks tickets. Our beloved Blackhawks. Mm-hmm. Who could really use some wind at their back right now.
Yeah.
Not exactly certain I don't, you know, Lauren Lapka, our
super fan extraordinaire.
Our fact checker, does the traffic, does the weather. But really, the most important thing she does is tell us when we're wrong. Is the biggest Hawks fan I have ever met. In a man, woman, human. It's a crazy devotion that you have to this team. She's got a tattoo she won't tell us about. There's all kinds of stuff that goes on here. And we were at the game last week when things didn't go so well.
A brutal loss to the Flames, which we general public, thought that should be an easy win, but nope.
Yep, and since then, she's been wearing all black, and I don't know what that means. In the season, we're not even at the All-Star break yet.
No. Are you saying this is reflecting my mood?
I'm just saying that she's dressed like, you know, like all of those like old-time Westerns or mob movies where there's a funeral and then the widow is wearing black for the rest of her life. That's kind of the way that she's got like one of those things over, like a netting over her head. It's weird.
No, I'm not quite there yet. If we would have lost to the Ducks, which, you know, I was a little worried early.
All right.
That would be more concerning. But we're okay.
Okay.
Right now.
I know. There's just a lot of people who are feeling the way that you're feeling right now.
She looks like the mother from Jaws.
Right, exactly. The Kittner boy. She wants to go up and slap Rocky Wirtz right in his face. That seems wrong.
I do not. There's nothing against Rocky here.
How about Stan Bowman? You want to go slap him in the face?
No comment.
Okay. We're going to get in trouble.
No, I don't want to slap anybody.
That's true. Okay. All right. Fine. Okay. All right. Good. Okay. Now, we're going to talk about this baseball thing coming up in the next hour. I think that I'm not overstating it by saying that the news that just occurred in the last 2 hours, really, may change the face of baseball, may change the face of professional sports. It's a cheating scandal. It involves the Houston Astros. Houston Astros manager and general manager were sanctioned huge money by Major League Baseball, and then within the hour of being sanctioned for this cheating scandal, I'll tell you exactly what it is in a second, but then they were fired by the Houston Astros. And the cheating scandal is essentially this, that there is they were stealing signs, right? That's the catcher signing to the pitcher what it is that what pitch he wants, right?
Mm-hmm.
This has been going on ever since they put a base in the second base position where there was a guy standing on it, standing behind the pitcher, and then looking at the catcher, right? Because the catcher has to know what's coming from the pitcher, right? Isn't that exactly the rule of baseball?
Yeah.
All right. So the catcher calls, and basically for as long as baseball's been around, the catcher's been, you know, kind of, as soon as the pitcher's got specific enough to be able to throw it over the plate, the catcher started asking them to put it at a certain place over the plate and with a given pitch, right? At least for the last 100 years of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
So there has been sign stealing. It's just been what it is. Now there's technology. These guys at the Houston Astros basically Belichicked this. They used video. They used replay on their iPads. And they used a trash can.
Their own signals, yeah.
Right. So what they would do is they were able to figure out, they were able to watch using video technology what the catcher was doing, then relay it to the batter by hitting a trash can in the dugout.
Mm-hmm.
This is what it sounded like.
Big giant thud.
I'm going to guess that that's a fastball. Okay, I'm gonna go two is a slider.
Yeah, it's record-setting $5 million fine for the Houston Astros. The manager and general manager, as you just said, were suspended for the entire 2020 season, and then just moments after that was announced by Rob Manfred, Major League Baseball commissioner, the Astros go ahead and fire him. This is not over yet, because Alex Cora, who was the team's bench coach during the 2017 season, who's currently the manager for the Red Sox, also apparently he was the ringleader of all of this, and AJ Hinch actually kind of frowned upon it and didn't really like it, because they went as far as putting a monitor in, essentially in the dugout, where they could watch a monitor, a feed from a camera from center field, and then, as you said, relay whatever pitch may be coming to the batter in the box. So Cora is the ringleader of this, if you want to put it that way.
Uh-huh.
He's going to be out of a job soon.
I mean, how did they think this was okay? They had to know this was cheating,
of course,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they certainly did. But they figure, well, then everybody must be pounding on their trash cans.
Oh, gosh.
Breaking ball, blown away. So it's, you know, as you said, it's science stealing's been around forever, but it's how are you stealing the science? And I think using technology is over the line here. Look, if a guy's on second base and he's able to figure out that a catcher is calling for a certain pitch and he finds a way to relay to the batter, I think some people might frown upon it. I think a lot of people will just call it gamesmanship or whatever you want to call it. It's there. It's not like a player could get an advantage by a guy tipping off his pitches. It's, you know, pitchers tip their pitches, so it's no different than a batter looking at the way a pitcher mechanics and says, well, when he drops his elbow this way, that means it's a breaking ball. It's still there, but putting a camera in center field and a monitor in your dugout, over the line.
Again, the question will be asked, is it? I mean, if everybody's looking the other way when a base runner does it, why should modern technology not be used? You know, why if
then what's the point of having them? They're supposed to be secret.
Right. Well, they'll have to change the technology. You know, this goes back. Let me just go back to the New England Patriots. Thank God they're not in the playoffs anymore.
Yes, we all know they're cheaters, though.
Right. But they were doing this. They were using video technology to cheat by watching practices of the other games, right? Their opponent teams.
And deflating balls and some other stuff.
Yeah, well, that's, you know what? At least the deflating of the balls, that was like old school, right? That's a mechanical thing. And now every team has to bring its own balls to the game,
mm-hmm.
which I've been accused of not doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's a tough call. I mean, even if they were using technology, let's say after the game they went back and reviewed the film and did look at the signs, even then I'm like, okay, maybe. But blatantly doing it in-game, pitch by pitch, takes the entire integrity of baseball out of it. Are you kidding me?
Okay, whoa.
telling a batter with a smashing a trash can that a breaking ball is coming or a fastball is coming, you can't do that.
The integrity of baseball.
Yes.
It has been called into question a number
on
of times.
Team yes, level. Very much. On a team level.
On a team level, it's been called into question, too. I mean, are we really trying to assume that when it came to the juicing scandals, that there were that the team management didn't realize when Sammy Sosa went from a size 9 hat to a size 18 hat in an hour and a half that nobody had figured out that there was a problem?
There was a problem, and people got in trouble for it.
Yeah, I'm working out. Well, then why is your head twice the size?
Oh, you're just casually hitting 550-foot bombs. Okay.
Right. You were a string bean before. You're literally the size of a blade of grass. And now you are like a professional wrestler.
Yeah.
And there happen to be these anabolic steroids in the marketplace. And then you go, oh, no. That was, I'm having a growth spurt.
A little late bloomer. At 30? Yep. Just hit my stride. Yeah, they addressed that. That was wrong. And they're going to address this. And I'm interested to see how many other teams had some sort of scheme like this. I'm sure there are a lot of people around baseball right now sweating a little bit.
Probably.
A little bit nervous. All around baseball.
Oh, you think so?
I forgot. How was this revealed, anyways? Who came out in?
What are the details coming up on that?
Yeah.
That's an interesting story.
Okay,
actually.
I was going to say.
How this whole thing started. It fell apart internally. And that I think there were people who knew on the inside.
Of course.
Who were not happy about this.
Because, good. I'm glad they came forward.
Because the integrity of the game has been called into question, as Kevin just pointed out. Which, again, I don't want to. Don't make me repeat myself. Oh man, there are some rules. I know we try to pretend there are no rules, but there are some rules. I'm not sure what those rules are anymore, but I just know that there are some rules. I'll let you know when I find out what they are. But until then, just know. Just remember, there are rules. And when somebody says to you, oh, there are no rules, don't worry about it, everybody's breaking the rules, just say, no, there are rules! And I'll get back to you on what they are and when they just showed up before. We got the news from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way in two.
Chicago's very own WQ.
Rokan Show, right here. 720 WGN. That's Kevin Powell over there on sports and thoughts. And that's Lauren Lapka on, well, everything else, basically, that that you hear. And then, of course, Kim Gordon in the newsroom, the WGN newsroom, where she is giving you the news and gloating over the Green Bay Packers today.
Yes, I am.
It's going to be a short
I'm
gloat.
Beaming green and gold. Can you see it?
Yes, I can. I do not. You were at the game yesterday, I'm assuming?
No, my family was. Remember, I didn't
Oh, that's
go.
Right. You didn't go. That's right. We did learn that last yes. week. Yes. All right. Well, congratulations.
Thank you, Ro.
No,
that means a lot coming from
I don't,
you.
I know.
A lot.
Well, since we're talking about football, and that's about as much as I'm going to talk about the results of the divisional playoffs over the weekend. We've got the big NFC and AFC championships next week, which is really weird because, you know, the way they're scheduling this, they've been doing it now like this for years, but it screws up your Sundays because it gives you an extended version of the Sunday Scaries. It basically has the Sunday Scaries on steroids. The things that you use, like when you have the Sunday Scaries, it happens after football generally. And then you have it for about an hour, right around the 60 minutes, tick, 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 mm-hmm. tick thing, right? And then as soon as you hear that, you're like, oh man, oh dude, I gotta get all, you know, whether it was school when you were a kid or as an adult, it's work or yeah. whatever it happens to be. It's like, I'm not ready for this.
I felt the weekend was over.
Yes. It's like, and then like, am I happy? You know, I just start to ask myself that question.
You just start envisioning your life and how it's going
to
go.
And then you think, well, Sunday Night Football's on. Maybe I could just, you know, continue to drink and I'll be okay. I don't have the Sunday Scaries in the spring and summer, though, as much. I don't know why.
Yeah. Because it's still light out for
yeah,
a while.
Yeah, right. It's the Sunday Scaries are really very much a product of the early sunset and the 60 minutes clock. Those are the two things
the
that trigger it.
Is the official theme song of the Sunday Scaries.
So next weekend, the games are going to be like they were yesterday. It's going to be a 2:30 start and like a 5:45 start, right?
Yeah, it's 2:05, the first kick. That's the AFC game. And then 5:40 is the NFC.
So that's going to go into the night. And there's going to be some partying. And then 2 weeks after that will be the Super Bowl. And the Super Bowl doesn't really start until about 5:45 for the kickoff.
Right.
And then you go to a party or whatever it is, and then there's drinking, and then there's imbibing, and then there's all kinds of bad behavior. Yeah. And there is a very high rate of, I forgot to show up for work the next day.
Right.
I'm sick.
Right.
My stomach and head just for some reason.
Yes, I've got the flu. So people like to say it's cold and flu season, right? So they always try to get away with that. Yeah. But the bosses know. The bosses know what's really going on.
Yeah, but the bosses also were also partaking in some drinking the night before. So everybody understands. They're all on the same page.
So Fox is trying to get the federal government, and you know Fox is good with the federal government. They're good. They're good. They got a guy right now in the White House where this might work.
They have some connections for sure.
To make the day after the Super Bowl a national holiday. Now, I know a little bit of this is tongue-in-cheek, but people are really talking about it now. Because, you know, we're really hard-working here in America. If we're going to take up... And today this came up on Wendy C. Live, and I thought, this is so funny, because the people are like, yeah, I don't need President's Day. Other people are like, what, Martin Luther King Day? What are you there for? How about the day after the Super Bowl?
Yeah, a day you know you're likely to be hungover.
Right. I'm not going to be hungover on Martin Luther King Day.
No, most likely not.
So that's, I think that's sort of the attitude that people have here. And then I'm like, oh, come on. People don't really want this. There's like a groundswell of support for this.
Hey, I'm all for it. Or move the Super Bowl up. And I don't think that's going
to
happen.
To an earlier time?
To an earlier time, not day.
There's something about Super Bowl Sunday where, I don't know, maybe it's just me and my friends. So you get to a certain level of drunk on Super Bowl Sunday. Because I think you start drinking the lead up to the Super Bowl. It's like a full day of drinking.
Because it's a party.
Right. And there's something about Super Bowl Sunday.
A couple years ago, I had to host Windy City the next day. And I was at a party that went quite late into the night.
Yeah.
Quite late into the night. As a matter of fact, I remember there was dancing in this guy's, you know, like his TV room. And there was no need for dancing in the TV room. That's the only thing I remember. And then it was an Uber. And then next thing you know, my alarm's going off, and I go to work over to Channel 7, and I literally turned to the audience, and I was like just a shade of pale right before the show started. We're sitting at the desk, And I turned to the audience. There's a couple hundred people in the audience every day. And I said, listen, there may be a moment where I get physically sick. Don't anybody react. It's a bad day. Yeah. I get it, but I don't think it should be a national holiday, but people think it should be. 312-981-7200. I want you to weigh in on this. 312-981-7200. The best lie you told to get off of work? Or should we just take it off because it's not worth the trouble in the first place the day after the Super Bowl, the Monday after the Super Bowl? Lauren Lapko, what's happening on the roads and the skies? That's right. Don't want to work. Want to bang on my drum all day. The day after the Super Bowl, there is actually a consensus in America right now. Because Fox is running these promos, because they've got the Super Bowl this year, that take the Monday of the Super Bowl off afterwards. We should make it a national holiday. And I believe that Fox, because they do seem to have, that company does seem to have a certain relationship with the commander-in-chief, who could probably get that done by executive order. We could probably get that done like that.
Yeah.
I do feel a little guilty that I worked at a retail shop in college, and I did not get along with my boss at all. And I know she specifically did it. She knew I was a rabid sports fan. She scheduled me during the entire Super Bowl, like start to finish. I called in that morning on Super Bowl Sunday. I feel guilty then, but I'm going to admit to it. And I told them that my mom's friend died, and I had to go home, so I can't come in for work.
Oh,
I feel awful, but I did it. And what are you going to do?
I would worry about karma.
312-981-7200, your best or worst excuse, depending on how it worked out for you, and just your general thoughts on whether we should move the Super Bowl or make that Monday a holiday and take away one of the other holidays. And I don't want to know your suggestions for the other holidays because you just make people mad. All right, Sandy, you're on WGN. Go ahead, Sandy.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Once I used an excuse that I had to take my girlfriend's father to dialysis. And the manager was like, why didn't your girlfriend take her own father? I said, well, she just got into a car accident, and she called me. And that seemed to work. And the best thing
well, why?
Was,
now, no how bad was the car accident?
At that time, and I didn't jinx anybody.
You pulled everything out there.
Oh, yes. You said he was already dead or he was already sick?
I said I had to take her father to dialysis.
Oh, yeah. Okay. No, I get it. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well.
It seemed to work. You know, I didn't jinx anybody because I wasn't seeing anybody at the time. So that was cool.
Oh, so you didn't even have a girlfriend?
Right. I didn't even have a girlfriend. So I made everything up.
Oh, that's very good, sir. That's very good.
Well done.
I need you to make a phone call for me tomorrow. Thanks. Bye. All right. Rick, you're on WGN. Go ahead, Rick.
Well, what you need to know is that I worked for a major computer company out west, and that Monday morning, after having had about 11 shots of tequila and still being alive, I had a bruise on my face. And I told my boss, well, you know, can't make it in because I've got a nasty bruise, and I went mountain biking yesterday, so that's why when you see me on Tuesday, I'm going to look like I took a nasty, nasty spill, which,
yeah.
Well, theoretically, I did, right?
Mm-hmm.
What did the bruise come from? What happened?
After those 11 shots of tequila, my girlfriend was driving us back to her place, and obviously nothing happened other than my face hitting her driveway. Because I was so inebriated.
Oh. Do you remember which Super Bowl it was?
If I was in Boise, Idaho, that would have been, let's see, Super Bowl in 1999.
That was Rams and Patriots.
I believe so, yeah. And obviously I wasn't happy that the Rams had lost either.
Yeah, that would have been that was Brady's first Super Bowl win, right? In 99? I think it was.
I'm not sure. I don't think it was.
Rams-Patriots.
Rams-Patriots. I think that
was
exactly.
No.
Maybe that was.
Yep.
I'm old enough that I should have remembered that, but I'm not sure.
But the tequila shots.
Oh, wait,
know,
no. No, it wasn't. No, that would have been 2000.
Broncos-Falcons was Super Bowl 33 in 1999.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the last very quickly, the last thing I remembered was being at a bar with two ladies that I knew from work and two other ladies that I knew, and they're and I remember telling them, get yourself whatever you want at the bar.
Uh-oh.
That's all I remember.
Still paying that bar bill. All right. Thank you, Rick. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Wow.
Wow. Let's talk to Craig. You're on WGN. Go ahead, Craig.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. I used to work at a factory, and there was an employee there, and she'd been there for quite a while. And you had to put in the first week of January what your vacation plans were for the year. Every year she would take off the Monday after Super Bowl. She didn't care who was playing, but she knew that there would be a carnival wagon there and the booze was going to flow free.
Yeah.
And she was going to be in no shape to come in on Monday. She was just realistic about it. But every year she did it. I mean, and it is a thing. So, I mean, you may laugh and make jokes about it, but national holiday wouldn't be out of line.
I have friends that basically book it a year out. Like the day if they go in the day after the Super Bowl, they tell a year from now I will not be here on this Monday.
Yeah, and I mean that's what she did. And it's just being realistic. You know, you're going to be partying until
late.
You know, yeah.
Because they used to actually have the Super Bowl when I was a kid. They'd have the Super Bowl in the afternoon, early in the afternoon. It wasn't a noon start, but it was like a 2 o'clock start. And they thought that was being super fancy by moving it to 2 o'clock. They're like, look at this. Look, we're getting rid of 2 hours of pregame. And they didn't realize that the whole pregame starts at 6 o'clock in the morning and it goes 11 and a half hours until they get into the actual game. It's like the Oscars, the same sort of thing. We got to watch somebody get their makeup done, right?
Yeah, back in those days, it was done by dinner time.
Yeah. You're done by dinner time, and you know there were results, and you liked it, and that was it. And there was no arguing about it the next day, and you know you went back to the factory floor. Not anymore, my friends. We've gotten soft. All right, thank
now
you very
it's a
much.
Holiday.
Yeah.
All right, have a good night, guys.
Thanks.
I like the idea of like a red carpet. It's like here's so and so. He's wearing number 55, which he always wears. He looks great, though.
It's insane how much pregame coverage there is for the Super Bowl.
Yes. Well, I mean, I don't know if anybody's watching. I mean, if you go to a Super Bowl party, nobody's really watching that.
No, it's on in the background.
Isn't it the crazy thing that the sound goes up during the commercials, though, at a Super Bowl party now?
Because they're so fun.
But you've seen them all now because of YouTube.
No, they're always new.
Well, but they have, like, YouTube, they put them out in advance.
I don't go on YouTube.
Oh. That's right. I forgot. You're a Mennonite. Brian, you're on WGN. Go ahead, Brian.
How are you guys doing? I believe, Ro, that it should be moved to Saturday because that way everyone can party all night, and I think there's justification for it as well. If the playoff games, such as this past weekend, can be played on a Saturday, why can't the Super Bowl be played on a Saturday? And with a two-week preparation, each team is going to have plenty of time to prepare and heal up for it. Moving it up one extra day to Saturday evening to allow us to party our brains out is a smart move.
Right, but they figure. I think the one industry that would have the greatest amount of trouble with this is the bar industry because they're already going to be busy on a Saturday. The bar lobby, I'm familiar with them. The bar lobby is going to be the people that are going to be say, hey, easy. We get that extra day out of this. And the liquor salespeople, all the people that want, you know, because this is like a bonus day for them. This
I'd
is
still
an extra
rather
Sunday.
Have like a day off, or
you'd rather have the Monday off.
Yeah, right. Not have to worry about waking up early.
All right, and finally, Lou, you're on WGN. Go ahead.
Hey guys, so I called out the day after Super Bowl with a cat scratch, and they asked me, "Well, how bad was the scratch from the cat?" And I said, "Well, let me tell you what happened." So I just get out of the shower. Not even putting a towel on him, on my knees cleaning the tub, and I look up and I see the cat's shadow of his head bobbing back and forth, weaving back and forth. And I said, what is that? Well, the next thing I know, I got this excruciating pain. My head goes forward, hits into the tile, and I was knocked out for half an hour.
Oh, that's terrible what happened over by you.
And never use toilet paper for a bandage.
Terrible infection. I could be out for the whole week, but I'm gonna gut it out. I'll be back Tuesday.
That's right. I just walked a little funny to make this story look good.
for half an hour, for as long as you could possibly go. All right, thank you, Lou. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Good way to cap that off.
Have you two ever used an excuse to get out of something. I still feel guilty about what I said, telling my boss that someone
not
near
and
dear
Super
to me
Bowl.
Had passed away.
Yeah, see, I will never use those kind of excuses because I'm afraid something bad will happen.
I called and I'm like, I just went all in with it. And right after, I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I did that.
I did, you know, in our business, we don't want to take the day off because it's the Wally Pip thing. You know, the next thing you take one day off and then you're replaced.
And it's a day, like, we got so much material to talk about, so I don't even.
Right. Exactly. Just try to get through it. I just hope I'm okay by three. That's how I look at the day after the Super Bowl. All right. Reminding you that coming up after the news from a Northwestern Medicine newsroom, which is right around the corner, we have a Chicago Blackhawks ticket giveaway. Thanks to our friends from Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons, find them online at fourseasonsheatingcooling.com and tune in every Monday all season long to win a pair of Hawks tickets from our friends at Four Seasons. These tickets, I got a pair coming up in just a few minutes, right after the news, to see the Hawks take on the Winnipeg Jets. On Sunday night, this upcoming Sunday night. So if you're not interested in it's the NFC is the late game, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Featuring a certain team from the NFC North and the Jimmy Garoppolo-led 49ers.
So an Illinois boy. I kind of feel like you got to go for the 49ers.
Got to pull for Jimmy G. He's fresh out of Arlington Heights.
Went to Eastern Illinois.
He hit the cradle of quarterbacks, right. Eastern Illinois.
Lived in Arlington, went to Rolling Meadows, played at Eastern.
Yeah, there you go. That's our guy.
That's our guy.
Well, the Bears could have had him. They didn't take him. Why didn't they do something about that?
Could have had a lot of guys.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it. You know what? I'm done now. All right, that's coming your way. And then back to the scandal that is rocking baseball, too. That's coming up. Rick Tellender is going to join us, a Pulitzer Prize winner, I think. I just said that. Like I knew it to be true. I seem to remember he's won something very big, and that's the most important thing. And if he hasn't won a Pulitzer, I'm going to call him right now and give him a Pulitzer between now and the time we talk to him. That's how we're going to do it. Rick Tellender will join us to talk about this. Yeah, I kind of think that this is a scandal rocking baseball, of cheating scandal, stealing of signs. A bunch of people, general manager and manager got fired today from the Houston Astros, and there's more to come. And how widespread is this, and will this change America's game once and for all? That's coming your way in the next half hour as well. But first, news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Here's Kim Gordon.
I have higher standards for the city and the franchise, and I'm going above and beyond MLB's penalty. Today, I have made the decision to dismiss A.J. Hinch and Jeff Luhnow.
All right. That was the team owner right there of the Houston Astros, Jim Crane, announcing that. All right, before we get to all of that conversation, let me just tell you, I got a pair of tickets right now to the Chicago Blackhawks taking on the Winnipeg Jets on Sunday. It's this Sunday, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Is that a 6 o'clock start? Is that a 6 o'clock
yeah,
puck?
Yeah, it is, bro.
I like a 6 o'clock puck.
So do I.
Yeah. There's something about that on a Sunday. That's a good way to get beyond the Sunday scaries.
Definitely.
Right? Especially Bears fans who want to go to that game. I'm not watching the NFC Championship game. I don't care. Let me know who's in the Super Bowl. I'm going to tell you that right now. So there's an opportunity. If you want to go to that game, there might be tickets available. Go to the website for that. But right now, caller number 19, 312-981-7200 rips us off for those tickets thanks to Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Cooling. Find them at fourseasonsheatingcooling.com. All right. And thank you to Four Seasons. Every Monday, they give us these tickets to give away. So it's very, very cool. It's very, very great. All right. Rick Tellender joins us. I awarded you a major journalistic prize a little bit ago, but I know that you're highly regarded, Rick. I think I gave you the Pulitzer. I'm not sure that you've ever won that, but don't correct me on it. It's okay. It's
not my cash, then.
That's true. Well, everybody's done okay in this. All right, let's talk about this situation in Houston. First of all, stealing of signs in baseball has been going on since they invented second base, right? I mean, isn't that just basically the case?
Yes. The first recorded instance, I did a little research, was 1876. The Hartford Dark Blues stuck a backup catcher in a shack somewhere, and he had binoculars and some kind of telegraph. So I guess he did Morse code back to the dugout. I don't know.
Send your carrier pigeon.
exactly right. Or maybe a Greek marathoner to run back and forth. Again, just wearing a loincloth. This strikes me a little bit like, oh my God, there's gambling in the casino. I can't believe it. There's a little bit of the I suppose the crocodile tears here, but it's the use of technology in this particular incident where the Houston Astros were actually using video technology and then were actually watching the signs in real time on a monitor in the dugout. And then they sent a guy over to the big trash can. I'm assuming that's the can that everybody spits in, right? And would then bang on the trash can to alert the batter to what the pitch was going to be. There you have it right there. Just that was a one. I would assume a one, like in baseball, one means just fastball, right? All right. So it's a technology thing that I think makes everybody uncomfortable. But don't you think a lot of teams are doing this?
Well, this is all about technology. And as we stated already, sign stealing went on from the get-go. And actually, it's not illegal to steal signs if you're on second base. It's not illegal for somebody in the dugout just to look at his signs and tell, hey, Skip, this guy, tell our batter that's a fastball. It's when you use technology, and as we know, technology has changed. You go back to, I guess a carrier pigeon was the start for smoke signals, but then you go through telegraph, telephone, all the way up to modern instantaneous things you can transmit with a tiny cell phone. You know, it's very funny to me. You look at baseball, and a lot of kids have grown up without ever seeing a real phone. Well, just look at some manager in the dugout when he's calling the bullpen. There's a real phone for you, and there's a reason they don't use a cell phone, so you don't call somebody else, or do anything. But a lot of these rules are unwritten. A lot of this is kind of like that's the code that's improper.
Right.
What these guys did down at Houston is they went too far. And also, it's like I compare it to speeding. We all speed, on the highway. You see somebody pulled over to the side. The cop's got his, red light going. And they're getting a ticket. And you just say, oh, boy, sucks for him because he got caught. So there's a lot more of this going on. I think the Astros, even the Red Sox are involved in something now. Joey Cora. One way to stop this, stop doing signs. The pitcher and the catcher have to know what's going on. They have to, or else a catcher will get killed if he thinks it's a curveball coming.
Right.
And the guy, Aroldis Chapman throws 103-mile-an-hour fastball.
Well, that's why in 1876, they had to figure that out, right? It was like, even then, the catcher, who had less equipment on at that time, still wanted to know where the ball was going. Because he better believe it. Right. So what I wonder is, what does it make sense? I know this is crazy, but does it make sense to have the same technology football has, where you've got a radio between the catcher and the pitcher?
Well, you could. You just have to ask yourself what kind of symbolically, what can of worms does that open? What if he's dialing in Mars, or who knows where those things are going?
That's true.
Or they're telling jokes, or God knows what. Technology, baseball is kind of anti-technology. It's very interesting. You go back to the 1980s and the White Sox. Tim Kirchen of ESPN wrote a story saying that they were using their scoreboard to signal balls or curveballs and fastballs to batters. And, that's 1980. There are incidents of Cardinals in 2002 accused the Cubs of stealing signs and giving them to Sammy Sosa because he was hitting so many home runs.
That wasn't it. The fact that his head had grown twice in size was it.
No, that's Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds.
Well, Sammy's head got a big toe. Yeah, that's true.
A little swollen. Yeah.
All right. Rick Tellender from the Chicago Sun-Times. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it, as always.
Thanks. Take care, Ralph. See you.
All right. We'll take your phone calls on this. 312-981-7200. Is this really that big of a deal? But now, how is baseball going to clean up baseball? If they couldn't clean up the steroid thing where guys were literally poisoning themselves and their brains and making themselves into nuts. A little, sign stealing, which goes back, the tradition goes back to 1876. why the big deal now? 312-91-7200 is our telephone number. All right, let's check in with Lauren Lapka right now. What's happening in the traffic and the weather? Coming up, top 5-5. We're going to have audio, of course, from today's big announcement by Major League Baseball that they're closing up shop, essentially, because they're cheating. They're stealing of signs. And we're trying to figure out if that, at 312-91-7200, we need your help on that, whether or not that is actually a big deal. It's been going on. We just talked to Rick Tellender since 1876 is the first recorded stolen sign in baseball.
Well, maybe stolen sign, but I kind of think, again, with the technology, but also seeming like you're stealing every sign. So how's the game even close to fair? If that's
well, they put a guy out with binoculars in the outfield in 1876. They put a guy out in the outfield with binoculars, and he was somehow sending signals back to the dugout. Rick Tellender thinks using a telegraph, which had really been something. Which again, this is not. That's basically the same use of technology that you're using now. It's just we just updated it a little bit. They didn't close down baseball for that. And it turns out everybody was doing it. Now, this did take place during the World Series season for the Houston Astros.
Yeah, the year they won.
Right. And so they were caught doing this. But then the Boston Red Sox may have been doing it in that same year, too.
That's because Alex Cora was the bench coach for the Houston Astros in 2017, developed the system, allegedly, and then brought it to Boston with him where the Red Sox won the World Series this season. He became their manager. So the Astros in 2017, then the Red Sox in 18. Uh-huh. Astros were back in it last year. So I think it's Major League Baseball's way of yes, anybody who's been around the game understands that sort of thing is going to be going on. But it's the way they did it, and I think it's Major League Baseball trying to send a message to teams around the league that they're not having it.
Thank you, Kevin Powell.
You're welcome.
Also coming up in the top 5-5, why a New Jersey couple learned the hard way not to buy secondhand diapers.
Secondhand diapers?
Yes.
Like hand-me-down diapers?
Hand-me-down diapers. Yep.
I didn't know that was a thing.
It's amazing. Yeah, I know. Well, it turns out it is, and there's amazing audio attached to that story. I hope you haven't eaten yet. That's all I would like to say about that. All right. So I think I'm going to have to come down on the side of this is not a big deal.
Well, so a texter sent this in, and I kind of been thinking the same thing. How did the players not know? I mean, they had to know. Everyone had to know if this was a system that was working for them, right? Especially banging the trash can. And that's what's
okay, let's go back and explain that, by the way, for people who are just joining us. All right, so the system, what the manager and general manager of the Houston Astros got fired for today was using a system where they put a camera out in the outfield that was trained on the catcher. And when the catcher was giving the sign for the pitch he wanted from the pitcher, fastball, slider, blah, 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 they were then able to watch what that camera was recording, was mm-hmm. capturing in real time on a screen in the dugout. And then they would tell a guy to bang on the trash can.
To relay the message.
To relay the message. Which sounded a little something like this. That's a one right there.
Big old thud on the can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in the report from Rob Manfred's office, it did say A.J. Hinch, the manager, who did go down
okay,
for
Okay, so
this.
Rob Manfred, the
commissioner of Major League Baseball.
Right.
A.J. Hinch is the former manager of the Astros. He didn't like it. He tried to put an end to it a couple times, actually tried to get the monitor out of the dugout, but he takes the fall for it, and it doesn't sound like he was a huge fan.
How does he not to get the monitor out of the dugout if he's not a big fan of it?
Yeah.
And he just goes, I'm taking it out. I'm not going to use it.
I don't know.
So that's a bigger question about who knew what and when did they know it?
They all knew.
This is like when... Talk about your impeachment trials. What about that? I mean, come on. So, oh, no, I really didn't want it in there. This is really, but really? Well, you could have taken it out if you're the manager.
He could have. Then he takes the fall for it. This is just the report from Manfred. It doesn't sound like Hinch was, it was sort of like, guys, don't do that. But then he kind of was like, yeah,
no,
all
stop.
Right.
Wait.
We're going to the World Series.
So the question then becomes, what are we teaching the youngsters. That's mm-hmm. the thing about sports, right? That's this, whether it was a steroid deal. And most kids who are just in Little League are not going to be using steroids, right? But the idea that in the 1980s into the 90s into the 2000s, without question, and even maybe today, there's a new breed of chemical drugs. Technology and drugs that are being used for at least to recuperate faster, right? So that the stress on your muscles and your body is masked. I think that's the technology that they've been working on here. And that's cheating because these are substances that are banned. And why are they banned? Not because they make you a better athlete, but because they can hurt you, theoretically. And it would be giving somebody an unfair advantage unless everybody were able to do it. And then if you want everybody doing it, what effect does that have on society in a grander way?
Well, yeah, if you think about players like Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, a lot of the big names, they were heroes for a lot of kids.
Yes, huge.
And to have that be the ultimate image now, that's troublesome. So I get it.
Well, they're not anymore.
Well, right? Obviously.
Yeah.
But think about it. If kids were growing up wanting to be like them, it's easy for them to be like, oh, well, it can't be that big of a deal if, you know, taking steroids.
So, but this is a more simple case because this is just straight up cheating. And mm-hmm. any team, a Little League team could do this.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, the technology is there. All you got to do, you go to Best Buy. You buy one of those little pin cameras at Best Buy. Or like an, all of a sudden you got like a, you know, like those, like a teddy bear has a camera in it. All of a sudden, there's a teddy bear out on the fence.
Playing outfield, yeah.
Right. It's on the fence, staring back, right in the exact position. No one else is out there except for this teddy bear that's stuck to the fence that's looking back at the catcher. And that teddy bear is now sending the picture to an iPad in the dugout. I mean, you could do that.
Right.
Is it, is it wrong? Is it wrong? I mean, I the stealing of the sign, if a player can do it and it's not against the rules, if a runner on second base can do it.
Yeah, just the technology component of it just makes it feel wrong. It just does.
It's very wrong. And if people knew that this was happening to them, they wouldn't do the signs. Why would they want to keep doing the signs if they know they're just getting taken? So it's the sneakiness.
Well, they have to come up with a more complicated sign. One for fastball, two for slider or curve or whatever it happens to be. I mean, eventually you're going to figure it out. They got to do what they do in baseball, right? Because like they call it the audible, it always means something football. Based on the color. Football. That you call out something. Have these guys just screaming at each other. And then they got to figure out what it is. Even better. Baseball players are not known for that level of sophistication.
He keeps yelling Omaha at the catcher. Omaha!
I just feel...
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, like I said, I think this is just them, the Major League Baseball sending a message throughout the league that they're not going to have this. And, you know, there are many people in baseball right now who are shaking in their boots a little bit. Because I guarantee other teams
are doing
something like this.
Oh, my God, everybody's doing it. You know the Cubs have got somebody up in that scoreboard, right? Because every once in a while, one of those... their mechanical scoreboard, one of those... You know, squares pulls out, and on a line and a box score, there's just a hole somewhere, and you're like, what's going on up there? And then their argument is always, oh, it gets so hot in here, I gotta just make sure, you know, they're doing it. And I'll tell you something, if there's any of that Theo guy, I'm looking at him, he knows what's going on. You've got to figure if Boston's doing it, right, which it appears to be the next people to go down. Houston did. I mean, are they going to take everybody out? Are they going to have to fire everybody? Because now if you fire everybody, see, this is where the general manager of Houston might have gone too far, because baseball handed down a suspension and a fine for doing this. And then the general manager of the team, or the owner of the team, fired the two executives. Well, the one executive and then the field manager. Now, what happens if every team gets accused of this? Is everybody going to be out of a job?
No, there's no way.
Right? And then all of a sudden the Houston guy is going to be, hey, you guys want your jobs back? I mean, where does that go?
Well, I think I actually applaud it because it sends a message that not only is the league not okay with it, but the people working in it aren't okay with it. So
I think everybody's okay with that. I think they just don't want to say it because it's cheating. So I think you just make it legal. You get drones
Fine.
Doing this.
Or make it legal, but then that way people know, so they will change signs. They will change tactics.
Change the technology. They should change the technology for how the signs get communicated, because the signs do have to be communicated. That's a separate issue. News from a Northwestern Medicine newsroom in 2.
Chicago's very own WGN Radio Chicago.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five, let's go.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show, sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right, we'll do that. It's Rokan Show right here. We got, of course, Kevin Powell on the traffic. I mean, on the sports. He's got his own thoughts about traffic, I think, too. And he actually did want to say something to Lauren about the traffic, because she's in charge of the traffic and the weather, and she's the fact checker, and Kevin is...
I'm not a fan of all the congestion, Lauren.
Oh, well, I'll stop that.
If you could fix that, that would be
right
wonderful.
Now,
yeah. Thank you very much.
What's going on right there? Wow. Yeah. I think I just had one of those brain cramp things, you know. Mr. Richard Roper is here. In a few minutes after the top 5 of 5, we are going to be discussing the Oscar nominations.
I was snubbed again. There I was, how uncomfortable. I was right there on set at How's It Going, America? You know, they were going to do the live interview with me if I got the nomination. And
you didn't get the nomination.
Yeah,
so. Actually, how many Oscars have you covered?
20-some.
And you've been to...
Nine in person.
Yes. So you have...
Snubbed at all those 9 as well, you know? So, every year, yeah. That reaction shot, like, oh, gosh, yes. Yeah, Leo deserved it. I hate him.
Rex Reed? What?
Thank God we don't honor our own.
Oh, yeah.
Rarely we do anything.
Thank God. All right, listen. Let's get to the top 5 at 5, and then we'll get to all the rest of that. Because there's some really interesting things in the Oscars this year. And it will prove to be, in a lot of ways, I think some of the best performances in a decade.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of tight races, not odds-on favorites in all the categories.
Right. All right, checking in at...
Number 5.
All right, I've been talking about this throughout the day. Houston Astros general manager Jeff Luhnow and the manager, field manager, A.J. Hinch, have been fired by the owner of the team after it was confirmed that the Astros had cheated by stealing signs using video technology. They had put a camera out in the outfield, and they were looking back at the catcher, and they were watching that in real time on a monitor in the dugout. And now people are shocked, I tell you, to find out there's cheating in baseball. What? So now the general manager was asked if the scandal does taint their World Series win because this investigation centered around that season.
I think absolutely not. I think, you know, we've had a very good team for a number of years. Before 17, we were turning the corner. 18, 19, we have a very good team on the field this year. You know, I think we'll have a great season. Got a lot of great players still. I don't think it taints it.
Notice the hemming and hawing there.
Yeah, it actually does. This is the one, too, where they bang on trash cans in the dugout to let guys know. So the other thing about this, too, guys, and Kev, I know you this, too. It's like, well, it would have been nice if one of the players had said, this is not cool, man. We shouldn't be doing this.
100%. And I'm not defending A.J. Hinch, the manager who was fired. But if there was one person trying to stop it, it was him. And it sounds like everyone was kind of like, eh, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it, coach.
Hey, easy.
You see my batting average? I'm a free agent after this year.
Easy. Who all of a sudden? Were you a Boy Scout?
It kind of was that.
Here's the owner. This is interesting. Here's the owner talking about how upset he was about the revelation.
When I found out, I was very upset. You know, we want to be known as playing by the rules. We broke the rules. We accept the punishment, and we're going to move forward. It's very unfortunate. As I said earlier, if you read the report, neither one of those guys implemented this or pushed it through the system. It really came from the bottom up. It's pretty clear in the report how that happened. But neither one of them did anything about it, and that's unfortunate, and the consequences are severe.
What does that mean? It came from the bottom. The clubhouse manager came up with this scheme?
That's the Belichick move. I don't know who's inflating those footballs. I didn't even get in the locker room. His name is Freddie Belichick, you know, the third cousin.
Oh, man. Oh, that is... come on.
Yeah.
That guy... That guy should get an Oscar nomination. Shut up!
I think the Astros, they should, in addition to all the other penalties, they should have to give Jose Altuve to one lucky lottery winner in the major leagues. All the other teams get their ping pong balls in a bucket. Like when you're in Little League and the teams are way over.
And they have to pay them.
Yeah.
That's the other thing.
Yeah, you have to pay them.
Right.
I couldn't have waited.
Oh, listen, everybody's going to get caught. It looks like the Red Sox are next.
Yeah.
And I'll be happy about that. Mm. All right. I just, kind of hope that nothing bad happens here. Mm. All right, let's check in now with Lauren Lapka. She'll tell us what's happening on the roads and in the skies.
Get real in the morning with Larry Potash, Robin Baumgarten, Paul Conrad, and the entire WGN-TV morning news team weekdays 4 to 10.
Top 5 at 5 continues right here. We're checking in at...
Number 4.
These are the top 5 most important things we think make up the day. Or tell us about our time in our life. We hope you agree. Jimmy Johnson, football coach, helped develop the Dallas Cowboys into America's team in the 1990s. And it's a legacy that will live on forever because last night he was announced as the newest member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And how they did it is really the cool thing. It was at halftime in the NFC divisional game. And I don't want to discuss which teams were actually in that or what the results were, because one of them was Green Bay. But at halftime, they were all standing around, they either sit down on a set or they stand around. They pretend they're still playing football on those virtual sets that they've got.
Yeah.
And this happened.
The only thing I can think of is all the assistant coaches that have worked for me, all the great players that have played for me. They're the reason I'm here, and they're the reason I can't talk.
All right.
I mean, this is so special to me because when you put in the work that we put in, it's nice to know people appreciate it.
Ooh. Now, that's what they did on Sunday. And when they have the guy from the Hall of Fame come out.
Yeah.
Right? They go, we have a special guy.
That guy's huge, by the way.
6'9", 420. Literally, the man.
6'9", 420 pounds. He walks out and he says, Coach Johnson, I just want to announce you're the newest member of the Hall of Fame. And that was Jimmy Johnson's response. So it appears that they might have kind of known it was coming.
I don't think he did.
He seemed really caught off guard.
Troy Aikman was tearing up in the booth. It's all his old
quarterback.
That's
true. They kept showing
that.
It was
really nice to see that.
They were showing that. They were going back and forth with Troy Aikman. And then the day before, they did it with longtime Pittsburgh Steeler coach Cowher.
Oh. I just tell him, V, I says, I've come to grips. I'm okay if it doesn't happen. I've been so blessed. And I would just say this, for those 8 candidates, every one of you deserved to be there. Football is a total team sport. I had some great players, some great coaches, the best organization in football. I've lived a blessed life. I've come to the best network on TV. It's a family here like it was a family that we had there. And to have to give back to something to the game of football, it's been a part of my life. The virtues that it teaches you, the morals that you have the obligation to move on, the platforms that...
Yeah, it's great. Listen, I liked Jimmy Johnson's reaction better. I can't breathe.
He did worry me a little bit with his...
that's true.
I was like, oh my gosh, is he having a heart attack?
The super fans in the air, all these big guys,
It sounds like Coach Cowher was well aware of what was going to happen.
He's more of the Pittsburgh Steeler type. Yeah, that's really nice. It's a good thing.
Cool.
I'm very emotional and touched right now. As he's bending something with his bare hands, with his mustache. It's a good thing.
Jimmy Johnson was an emotional,
He was like that at Miami, too. I mean, right. You either love him or hate him, but his players loved him. Players always loved him. Because curfew was like tomorrow.
Right.
Remember those Cowboys? They had that little house. It wasn't so little, just an extra little house.
The White House.
Just in case somebody got lost, you mean?
Yeah, it was a support group mostly in there. Mm-hmm. You could cheer a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now every TV commercial about football has guys all living in a house together. Yeah, right, the Heisman House odd. Or whatever it is, or all kind of in a house.
Confused about that.
Turns out that that really did start with the Dallas Cowboys, which was basically their drop house, their flop house, their place where you could go to get away from your family or law enforcement or whatever it was.
And bring your girlfriend, maybe.
You know, the damnedest thing was that in the 1970s, the Cowboys they literally had a doctor that would give players cocaine on the sidelines.
They didn't even have the tent back then either.
Right. I mean, it was crazy. Congratulations. America's team.
Way to put a nice spin on that feel-good story, Ro.
Number three.
It's a mystery that has rattled Nasley Sales and her family. New Jersey City mom had ordered 2 boxes of diapers from Amazon. She does every month for her 2 daughters. She purchased the items from the site's Amazon warehouse section, where it's open box sales. You know, you ever hear that? Oh, it's an open box.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And what does that mean? It just means the box was open. And it fell. It opened up. I don't know. Whatever happened, it happened. I don't like that when they say it's an open box, because that means it was returned. It was returned. For what reason was it returned?
Mm-hmm.
And would you really want to buy diapers this way? Honest to God, is that the way to go?
Tried them just once. Like new.
They are expensive.
When the package arrived, she said there was nothing. Nothing that could have prepared her for what she found inside.
I picked up the diapers and it was a little bit heavy. I was half asleep. The lights were off. At that point, I turned on the light and that's when I noticed these diapers are neatly folded and they are soiled. I couldn't believe it.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Ugh. Oh, God. So her boyfriend then decides, hey, you know what I'm going to do here? I got to call Amazon. I'm going to give Amazon a little piece of my mind right here. And did not exactly go well.
They were like, okay, yeah, we are very sorry for your inconvenience. We'll give you a refund. You're happy to keep the stuff. You know, don't no need to return it. And my thought was, wow, you are not understanding what I'm saying.
You can keep it.
No. I don't want to keep it. No, I want you personally to come pick it up. I want Jeff Bezos to show up here in person, drop from a drone, and have to smell the diapers and then take them with him.
How would you rate your experience? Get that email.
Or rate the diapers. Right. I hate that. I don't want to. All of a sudden, I got to rate a belt that I just got. I don't think so.
Are you satisfied with your printer cartridge?
A sweatshirt? No. All right, moving along in the top 5 at 5. Tim.
Number 2.
You win some, you lose some. As the saying goes. And that's the case of Family Feud contestant Yves Dubois. It turned out, it's more the lose some. All right. There was a question during the incredibly intense sudden death round of Family Feud Canada. Which, by the way, when I saw this story today, I thought to myself, Canada has its own Family Feud?
Mm-hmm.
They can't take our Family Feud?
Mm-mm.
You can't, like, what, Steve Harvey's not good enough for you?
It's a nicer version.
Your family discussion. Gets along.
Yeah. Oh, you go first. You hit the buzzer ahead of me.
Canadian host is Jerry D. He called on Eve and Logan White to represent their respective families in the single question face-off. At stake was Eve's family's chance for a second $10,000 win. But that's Canadian money. What is that worth to it? Yeah, it's like that's like $50. Then there was this moment of truth.
Name Popeye's favorite food.
Chicken!
Oh my God!
Show me chicken!
Spinach, Jerry.
The video is fabulous because she is really so confident. She does like a sexy dance to go with it.
Oh. I mean, in her defense, I think a lot of people would have immediately just thought chicken.
Yeah, Popeye's chicken is not going to give them
$10,000
worth of food, they said, for that. The
Canadian. Again, which $10,000 worth of food sandwiches. Canadian is like, that's like an entire semi-truck full.
Popeye's chicken.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry. Sorry, I didn't realize it was Popeye the Sailor Man.
When's the last time Popeye was out there?
You know? Right. I mean, that is true. I mean, the last time Popeye was in the as a character was in the popular culture was 30 years ago when the movie came out.
Yeah, Robin Williams as Popeye.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it hasn't been. I mean, those cartoons are black and white. Half of them. They don't run them anymore. There's other stuff. The Simpsons have been on for 30 years. Please. See the Canadians. They're always going to cause trouble. And then finally on the top five most important things you're going to hear all day, at least. We hope so.
Number one.
That's right. He's swinging for the species. The most sexually active turtle in history has been released into the wild after possibly saving his entire breed from extinction. The hard-shelled heartthrob, known as Diego, the sexy tortoise, is credited with fathering thousands of descendants since the 1960s, when his giant tortoise species had just 2 males and 12 females alive in their natural habitat. Jorge Carrion, the Galapagos National Parks director, told the BBC Diego was a motivator.
It's not just the 800 babies that he sired, but he then inspired the other males to become sexually active, and together that group of tortoises has sired and created over 2,000 babies, which have been released back on Española now.
Wow.
So he is doing his duty for sure, and he's a normal tortoise, but what's spectacular is this is without a doubt, if not the most, one of the most successful conservation stories for turtles and tortoises globally.
Diego's 100 years old.
Wow.
Now think about that. He's still going strong at 100 years old. They always say that, you know, guys, they can do that.
If he shall remain tired after 4 hours, see a physician.
175 pounds, by the way. Now, he will be returned to his native Española.
Oh.
So he can reunite with the kids, I guess. I think that's the most important thing.
Local hero.
Yeah, you know who I am. Right? You know what? This has happened in my life. Hey, by the way, I'm your dad. You know, so that
can
happen.
And your dad. It's very like the royal family.
Yeah.
Just like the one
Wait! You're my dad?
The king returns home.
We actually found our great sonic genius, Brian Altimer, who puts all of this together for us.
Mm-hmm.
He found this, what it sounds like when tortoises are mating.
Oh,
no, I know, he did. That sounds like me, too, so I don't know what's it.
You're going to have to play a game later. Jimmy Johnson or sexually active tortoise. Which one is the sound we're listening to right now?
Oh, God. Oh,
that's okay. Incredible. Who knew they had that much going on?
I can't talk.
Gonna close this thing up.
The top five at five.
Keep Gordon's got news from a Northwestern Medicine newsroom. Yes, it's the Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. In the studio right now, you got Kevin Powell. He does the sports. You got Lauren Lapka, traffic, weather, and also all fact checking. And she's in charge of the texts, too, because I can't read.
And I clean up the area after we leave. No, that actually Brian does that, I will say.
Thank you, Brian, our producer. All right, and Mr. Richard Roper, famed film critic for the Chicago Sun-Times, his thumb is worth millions at the box office, is here to talk about the Oscars. This is a great Oscar season. 2019 was one of the best years ever in the history of filmmaking.
I thought it was a great year. You're absolutely right. Probably the best year of the decade, for sure. It gets tough when you start going through all the years in history, but I'm with you. Not only some really great films, but so many films that were just near great, but also in other years might have gotten nominated, and also an abundance of performances. There have been some years where, especially in the actress categories, because of Hollywood's, you know, bias and there not being that many roles, it was tough to fill a category. Or you knew for sure, okay, these are the five supporting actress performances. There's really no other contenders. This year, you could make a whole list of nominees of the people who didn't get picked, who didn't hear their names read this morning at 5:18 Pacific time in the dark.
They do that because they want to. It's the old school way because they want to get on Good Morning America. Very important for them.
I've been trying to tell the Academy this for years. It's like they make, you know, the Heisman Trophy
selection special is like 3 hours. All those great backstories and everything. Right. The NFL draft is like beautiful television. They could do something like that with the nominations. Like, you know, do behind the scenes, make it a primetime special, put it on, you know, Bravo or something. And instead, it's two people in the theater, and there's only like a like maybe 40 people in the background, some publicists maybe and some journalists. Like, yeah. So like when, you know, like Anthony Hopkins' name gets announced, and it sounds like he was just nominated for assistant, you know, insurance salesman of the Midwest. It's a very underwhelming.
Now, okay, so in all of the categories, mm-hmm. like the actor categories, there's five nominees, yes. right? Well, actually, there's six in Best Supporting Actress. How does that work?
No, there's five. That's your. Those are your cheater glasses. You don't.
Oh,
you know,
I see. That's you're right. And then for the Oscar for the Best Picture, it's nine.
There's nine. You know, people might remember for a very long time there were just five nominees for Best Picture. Way back in the day, there used to be more. Then they expanded it a few years ago, in the hopes of getting, you know, more inclusive films and also recognizing box office popular films like Black Panther, for example, got a Best Picture nomination. It could be anywhere from 5 to 10. They have a kind of like a weighted balloting system. So everybody votes for Best Picture and then they have a second round. So, and there's a certain minimum requirement. The fact that there's nine nominees tells you that there's no clear cut favorite, that the voting was spread out so much that nine were, it's like, it's the Democratic primary, essentially. Look at it that way in the early going.
I can tell you who Elizabeth Warren is in this, by the way. I know exactly.
When Yang and Buttigieg and Beto and everybody had high hopes, that's what the best picture is. But if you look at those films, Ro, there's not a clunker in the bunch. That's a great list of Best Picture nominees.
And there were some that I'm surprised weren't on here, which is, we'll go through the nominees in just a little bit.
Okay.
But there's another incumbent conspiracy that happens around this is that there's already a backlash to the fact that there are not enough African Americans nominated this year. And there was a movie, I mean, Harriet, right, about Harriet Tubman. Mm. There's a nomination in there, though. But in terms of inclusion, if you will, that's there. Remember Oscars.
Oscar So White was so the big white. Protest movement. 2 years in a row where all 20 nominees were white. Well, listen, 19 out of the 20 nominees this year are white. Cynthia Erivo, as you mentioned, for Harriet being the lone exception.
Right. So this is Oscar's almost so white. Kind of too white. I don't know. But I don't.
Oscar's like certain neighborhoods.
This wasn't a year, really, where you have that number. Last year, the year before, had a lot more movies that were centric, that were African American centric, mm-hmm. or that were. Although at the end of the year here, two late contenders, kind of. Was it? Help me out here.
The Farewell was one,
right? Asian, but then also you had the this will come to me in just
a
second.
Well, we had other films that I loved. For example, Queen and Slim, which was an African-American lead, so worked great. Listen, there's a lot that could be said of this. It's a reminder that even though the Academy expanded its membership a couple of years ago and invited quite a few more persons of color and women and people who were a little bit younger, it's still dominated by an older white male voting bloc. And you see a lot of traditional safe choices come nomination time.
Well, we'll talk about the older white man who got nominated coming up in just a second here. But first, let's find out from Lauren Lapko what's happening on the roads and in the skies. It's the Rokan Show right here, 720 WGN. We're talking little gold statues right now. Richard Roper, famed film critic, is with us, internationally known. His thumb is worth millions at the box office, as we like to say. So keep it on if you could possibly do that. He has we have the list of this year's Oscars, as read this morning at 5:18 Pacific time. And they do this, as you pointed out, in for no apparent reason. They decide that they're going to get up in the middle of the night and they're going to get a couple of actors that just hope they can suck up to the Academy and one day be presenters, let alone winners. And they show up at 5 o'clock in the morning. They show up for makeup at like 2 o'clock in the morning. Jeez. And they stand there and they wait until there's a live shot on ABC to show this, and I guess maybe some of the associated entertainment shows also pick this up live, and of course on the web.
Yeah,
like a webcast.
It streams live now. It's very exciting.
Yeah.
Get up in the, you know, like you did for the royal wedding.
And then all the actors and actresses who are being nominated, or technicians and all the people being nominated, they go, well, I slept through it. I didn't want to
My
get
agent
up for
woke
it.
Me up. I said, what are you calling me so early? Well, Miss Streep. It's like, give me a break. You knew you
she
were
did not get
it.
Nominated, by the way. I thought for sure she was going to get nominated this year for Best Supporting Actress in Little Women. But she did not. Let's go through the Best Picture nominees in the scintillating way they were read this morning in Hollywood.
Voting members of the Academy have nominated the following films for Best Picture.
Ford versus Ferrari. Peter Chernin, Jen O'Topping, and James Mangold, producers.
Interns.
The Irishman, Martin Scorsese, Robert De Niro, Jane Rosenthal, and Emma Tillinger-Koskoff. Producers.
There's always names you don't know.
The producers of all these films, too. Which is like, okay.
Jojo Rabbit, Carthew Neal, and Taika Waititi. Producers.
Nailed it.
Joker, Todd Phillips, Bradley Cooper, and Emma Tillinger-Koskoff, producers.
Oh, Emma Tillinger-Koskoff's got two shots at it.
And Bradley helped develop Joker.
Little Women, Amy Pascal, producer.
Thank God there was only one there.
Marriage Story, Noah Baumbach and David Heyman, producers.
1917, Sam Mendes, Pippa Harris, Jane Ann Tengren, and Callum McDougall, producers.
Callum McDougall. I really hope he gets it.
Finally, McDougall.
Once upon a time in Hollywood, David Heyman, Shannon McIntosh, and Quentin Tarantino, producers.
David Heyman, twice. I think I went to school with him.
Probably.
And Parasite, Kwak Shin-hye and Bong Joon-ho, producers.
Nailed it! Yes!
Well, it's John Cho.
John Cho was there for a reason.
You'll notice something interesting there, though, in more than half of the cases, that the director of the film was also an officially credited producer, which a lot of directors smartly do. First of all, they are sometimes, but it's also a way, if your film wins for Best Picture, the producers are the ones who physically get the Oscars. So Bradley Cooper would get an Oscar if the Joker won Best Picture.
Richard Roper, you should explain, Hollywood insider, you should explain what a producer is when they announce these. Because these are the people that, in some cases, just pay money for the movie.
It depends on. I mean, some great producers really marshal the project all the way from start to finish. They're filmmakers. They work with the directors. But yeah, sometimes it's just a matter of you get a vanity credit. You know,
Steve Mnuchin is an executive producer of the Wonder Woman series.
Yeah.
Right. And it's a funny thing. Like Steve Mnuchin, a filmmaker, is just the money guy.
Well, when you see executive producer, that's much more often someone who's on the money side of things, or an executive producer. As you notice here, the official producers who are in the PGA and all that stuff, those are the ones who actually get the nomination. So again, if these pictures win, any of these movies, whichever one wins for Best Picture. So in other words, if Once Upon a Time in Hollywood wins Best Picture, but Quentin doesn't win for Best Director, he's going to have an Oscar as the producer of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Right.
Robert De Niro, who didn't get nominated as an actor, would actually win as the producer of The Irishman. So he'd go up there and go, thanks a little bit, thanks. And then just like, that would be the whole speech.
Well, that's always at the end, and they're done anyway. And they don't have, again, the Oscars are not going to have a host because it's too controversial to be the Oscar host. You have to have been perfect because of everything that has gone wrong in the last decade, or has at least been revealed in the last decade, has been going wrong for the last 12 decades in Hollywood is now that's the end. It's, you know, we have to have somebody that we have to just have a silent voiceover and it's an anonymous person.
Yeah. Well, the actual two popes turned it down. They were asked to host and then someone found a tweet from Benedict, I believe, back in the day. You know.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about it. I'm surprised that didn't get nominated, too. That is. And there were 10 slots and they only nominated 9. That is an excellent, excellent film. Although you and I disagree about that. But that's for the podcast.
But the two actors were nominated. The two
popes,
you know, Jonathan Pryce and Anthony Hopkins.
The Richard Roper and Rokan podcast.
Yes, we talked about
dealing with the Oscars coming up this week, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
So you can, if you've been subscribing to that, you can continue to download. If you haven't, you should subscribe now. Mm. All right. Let's talk about the Best Picture race a little bit here. The Irishman and Marriage Story, those were made by Netflix. And were given that deal where they were in theaters for a couple of weeks and then went straight to Netflix.
Both available if you're a Netflix subscriber right now. They've been available for quite a while there.
More people have seen those movies than have seen any of the rest of these
That's
movies. And will have
true.
More of a rooting interest
absolutely
in these movies.
True.
Will the film business, because especially the theater owner exhibitor part of the business, which is a very important part of the business, will there be a backlash because these are Netflix films?
Yes, especially because we talk about how there's a lot of traditional, established, old school voters. Once you're in the Academy, you're always in the Academy. There are voters who are literally in the motion picture home, like, you know, who haven't been in the business for 25 years. They still have Oscar ballots. So I and then some of the established executives. So I think that works against them. I think some of these films, as much as we loved Ford versus Ferrari, and I really liked, you know, Little Women, Jojo Rabbit, I think those are the kind of fall under the umbrella of it's an honor just to be nominated. It'd be an upset if any of those win. But then you look at Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, you look at 1917. Those two are, I think, are probably the favorites. But when there are that many nominees, someone could slip in. Parasite, which will win for Best Foreign Film, probably won't win Best Picture because of that, but you never know.
And Parasite is in Korean.
Yes.
Right? That's
fantastic film when people get a chance.
Yes. Everybody raves about that film. Now, 1917 won the Golden Globe. Does that make it the odds-on favorite?
I don't know if it makes it the odds-on favorite. It definitely gave it a boost. And Sam Mendes, who directed American Beauty, is, you know, a great director. It's a British film. And the Academy loves all things British. It also, it's a beautifully done film, and sometimes very haunting and sometimes disturbing. But it's one of the most well-photographed war movies ever made. And one of the best movies about World War I, which hasn't had nearly the exposure that World War II and other films have had over the year, other wars have had throughout the years.
Right.
So, and it is, to me, you know, you can't go wrong. It's a prestige picture. There's no doubt about that.
Okay. And now in the actors category, you got Tom Hanks. This is for supporting actor. Tom Hanks playing Mr. Rogers. You got Anthony Hopkins, who plays Pope Benedict in The Two Popes. You got Al Pacino and Joe Pesci battling it out, both from The Irishman. Then Brad Pitt, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. The fact that you've got two guys from The Irishman, doesn't it, do they cancel each other out?
It sometimes does. Also, you know, you look at that, that's probably the most star-studded category you're ever going to see. I mean, all those guys are, you know, have all, every, Brad Pitt's the, he's the only slacker in the bunch. Brad Pitt. The rest of them all have at least one acting Oscar. So when you look at the star power there, the legends in that category, I think Brad Pitt's actually going to win.
Supporting actress, Kathy Bates, Laura Dern, Scarlett Johansson, Florence Pugh, who's an actress in Little Women, and Margot Robbie for Bombshell.
Yeah, it's a great category. A lot of people say, where's Jennifer Lopez? Well, I'm like, I'm where she should be. She's on the outside looking in. I didn't think she should get nominated for Hustlers. Great performance. Laura Dern. It's Laura Dern's year. You know how it becomes somebody's year? They say, it's your year, Rokan! It's Laura Dern's year, because she's a popular actress. You know,
that was 15 years ago, but yeah, I remember that year.
And, of course, her father, Bruce Dern, you know, Winnetka, new cheer guy, you know, a legend in the business, was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And Laura Dern has been around, and she's been that the Big Little Lies, so she's got, a you know, maybe the highest profile she's ever had. She's wonderful in Marriage Story.
All right, so Best Actor, Antonio Banderas, Leonardo DiCaprio for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Adam Driver for Marriage Story, again, the Netflix movie, Joaquin Phoenix for Joker, and Jonathan Pryce for The Two Popes. Joaquin Phoenix won the Golden Globe.
He's the odds-on favorite. You know, I think he wins. He should win. It's an amazing performance. Everybody in there is really good. Antonio Banderas, a little bit of a kind of a long shot candidate because he's so popular. We like him.
Best actress, Cynthia Erivo for Harriet, Scarlett Johansson for Marriage Story, Saoirse Ronan for Little Women, Charlize Theron for Bombshell, and Renee Zellweger for Judy. Judy, she won that.
She's going to win. She shouldn't win.
She's going to win. She shouldn't win.
Exactly.
Who should win?
Awkwafina for The Farewell, who is not nominated. Out of that group, I would go with Charlize Theron. Amazing channeling of Megyn Kelly in Bombshell. I thought she was great.
All right. Okay. There you have it.
There you have
More
it.
On that.
Sure.
You know, these are not official predictions yet.
Just now we're just like, getting people worked up. I'm looking forward to seeing Al Pacino.
We got news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way in 2 minutes. Don't I know that to be true? It's the Rokan Show right here, 720 WGN. Political editor of all times, Mr. Mike Flannery, has just stepped into the studio. You see him on Fox Chicago. And there's a couple of things happening in Chicago today that we need to talk about. The police superintendent of Chicago, the interim police superintendent, was at a big speech to big downtown muckety mucks. And he said that he intends to find a way to make Chicago the safest big city in America. To which there was a gasp and people fainted, actually, in the room.
Grown men fainted dead away.
Right, exactly. Because they're like, I don't know how that's even remotely possible. We'll talk about that in just a few minutes here. But I want, before we go any further here, because you're the guy to ask. You've been covering politics in Chicago at from the newspapers, from television for the long time.
Since Richard J. Daley's last campaign. I covered that for the Sun-Times.
There you go. So this is a long time. Since the 1970s, you've been covering this town. Do you believe that this scandal that seems to have arisen from these emails that have emerged that show that that there was a guy that was working for the working in government? They were trying to protect this guy who was working in government because he was a good guy, because he knew things that he had not publicly stated, and that goes up to but does not completely surround Mike Madigan. Do you think this is finally the end of the Madigan era?
Not this. But it's just one more brick in the wall, isn't it? There were some guys who sang a song about that, I thought. Mm-hmm. There are so many different things challenging Madigan now. He's never been in a place like this. Never, ever. It's going to be an altogether challenging year. The collateral damage here in this case that you're talking about, J.B. Pritzker over the weekend demanded the resignation of John Sullivan, the downstate former state legislator from Quincy, the Democrat from...
who was involved in these emails.
Yeah, he received one of these emails referencing, he admits that he received, he was copied on an email referencing this cover-up of a rape and the ghost payrolling. He says at the time, which is true, he was being treated for cancer at a hospital in Baltimore and was going back and forth. He claims not to have read the email. Said if he had read it, he would have immediately turned it over to the inspector general and would have been outraged.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean.
But he's gone.
Okay. So. And we should make clear, because it's now become clear what this reference to the rape was.
We should say we think it's now clear.
Okay. We think it's now clear.
We don't have an official report yet.
This wasn't like a state employee who was accused of criminal sexual assault and they were covering it up. This is a case of a guy that the governor had let out of prison, Governor Quinn had let out of prison, who had been convicted of a rape and then goes and commits another one when he gets out. And then,
the victim's allegedly under 13.
Right. So, which is a horrifying story. But they didn't want that to come out because that would have been politically bad to find it, you know. So that, I don't know that that makes the story better or worse. It kind of makes it a little worse as far as I'm concerned. But it's.
Which is why Pritzker demanded Sullivan resign.
Right. So this is a, you know, you don't want to cover that up just for political expedience. Right.
Right.
I mean, that's the idea
there. Right.
And the,
But again, we haven't had it touch Madigan. Madigan says he knew nothing about it. He wasn't copied on emails, he said, and
I've never even seen an email. A lot of those guys, I have no email, right? I wouldn't be surprised if Mike Madigan, they have flip phones.
I've talked to guys who call his wife's cell phone when they're trying to reach him because Madigan supposedly doesn't have a cell phone.
Oh my God. What happens if he's at the store and he has to call his wife to find out, was it 2% milk that we needed or skim? I can't remember. Which did we go to?
But I'll tell you what doesn't happen. FBI agents don't listen in.
What? All right. Okay, we're going to get that. So you don't think that this topples that, but this is it's a story that gives us insight, right, into the way that Chicago politics, Illinois politics work. And that at the governor's level, you know, they didn't want to have a commutation gone bad or a release gone bad.
Right.
Now, it wasn't a commutation, but, you know, a guy getting
Quinn was doing this. I think he was giving an extra 180 days. The goal was to reduce the prison population and save money. And meanwhile, the Rauner campaign, he ended up, of course, defeating Quinn. They were looking for cases like this. They didn't find this case.
And it was sitting right in front of them, too. All right. Well, the Rauner administration didn't find a lot of things, as it turned out. Coming up, you have a story about a guy, Mike Flannery, from Fox 32. You, the political editor of all times in this town. You're going to tell us how the interim Chicago police superintendent thinks he is going to make Chicago, as he said today, the safest big city in America. I'm going to let that sink in for just a second. But first, Lauren Lapka's got the traffic and the weather. It is the Rokan Show right here on WGN Radio. Let us now talk to Mike Flannery. He is the political director of all political directors of television in this town, also in print. I mean, there have been a lot of great political reporters in this town, and right at the very top of the pyramid is Mike Flannery. So wow. Just take the compliment. Thanks. No matter what. All right, so let's talk about the interim Chicago police superintendent, Charlie Beck, was at the City Club.
The City Club of Chicago.
That's a bunch of business leaders, and they all sit around in a room having lunch, right? And they've got these guys in tuxedos handing the silver down onto and there's bad chicken, and you know what it is, right? And there's clinking and clanking. And he got up and
reporters like it though because the chicken's free,
right?
And the pasta,
right? And Father Flager's always there. Anyway, the point is that you have got a police superintendent who says, interim guy, who says he wants to make Chicago, he's got a plan as interim guy to make Chicago the safest big city in America. First of all, he's the interim guy. Why is he doing that?
Well, he's the former police chief in L.A., and they went, as he recalls, he was a lieutenant. He said he was a sergeant and a lieutenant working on gang crimes. He remembers the days 20 years ago when they had 1,200 murders a year in L.A. 1,200! We peaked at about 800 in 2016, the recent peak. We had about 500 this past year, just about it. L.A., though, 251.
Right.
They had about a 70% decline in homicides. So look, whatever
LA
you think
is
of
about
this
a
guy,
million. LA is it's defined by these by the police department there by the city of Los Angeles, which is a large swath of land. But
about 4 million.
It's about 4 million. So it is about 1.3 million bigger than we are.
Right, and the LAPD. Well, the Chicago PD, on a per capita basis, is about one-third larger than the LAPD.
Although that's an unfair statistic because the Los Angeles County Police also cover parts of the city of Los Angeles in a way that the Cook County Police do not. So in terms of uniformed officers on the street, Los Angeles, the per capita is higher in Los Angeles than it is here. But that's a
separate issue. Well, okay. All right. That's an important point. But the Beck's message today was that after 3 years of steady double-digit declines in shootings and killings mm-hmm. every year, since that peak of about 800 killings, we're down to about 500, he predicts further double-digit dramatic declines. He thinks we'll get down to L.A., New York levels on a per capita basis.
And New York is a ridiculous thing because New York has three times the population.
New York has over 8 million people.
Right, that Chicago has. And has far fewer murders. So how's he going to do it? What's his plan?
Well, he says the technology. He says all the pieces are in place. He cites these strategic decision centers that analyze where shootings have taken place, then put people in the street to try to prevent reprisal shootings, since so many of the killings here stem from disputes on social media or their intra-gang, drug turf-type disputes. In addition, he says this year, the city is increasing by a factor of 7 the non-police violence intervention spending that it's doing. Mayor Lightfoot's a big believer in this violence interruption strategy.
Which has been a strategy in Chicago for 40 years.
It's going to be deployed out on the street and supplemented not
it
just
was
with
40
the
violence years ago
interruption.
Too, but go ahead, yeah.
But there's going to be, they claim they're going to be spending part of this $11.5 million on not just expansion of outreach to support additional community-based street outreach workers, but a new pilot program providing intensive support for the young men who are at the highest risk of violence. They're going to provide cognitive behavioral therapy, case management support services, offers of jobs, schooling. They got $1 million. They got a grant for $900,000 for that kind of thing. And they're going to provide trauma-informed victim services within community-based organizations. One of the things, Ro, and you and I have talked about
I'm this. So jaundiced about this.
I know.
Because
I know.
I've
but
been
I'll tell you this.
Hearing this for, like I said, for, well, professionally, I've been hearing this for 30 years.
All right. In the 1990s, I went with Richie Daley and Bill Clinton to Beethoven Elementary, down in the old Robert Taylor Homes, which is now just a grassy plain just east of the Dan Ryan Expressway. There, it was at 50th and Federal, 51st and Federal or so, Beethoven Elementary. Bill Clinton walks in and says, it was a class of first, second, third graders, little kids. How many of you have seen somebody shot? A majority of these little kids raise their hands. I remember being stunned by that. You know, the claim is...
This is
that-
all true. It's traumatic. And what it is these kids... They get PTSD very early in their lives, and they have really nobody leading them through it, and then they end up getting sucked up into the same world and getting a gun placed in their hand, and all they can think about is how they're going to protect themselves and their friends and potentially their family from getting shot too. But this whole idea, back in the 1980s, there was a thing called the Gang Intervention Network that they did here in Chicago. It was actually headquartered just across the river from where we are right now at the old Peshtigo Court police. It was a police and city kind of building, had some police in it, but mostly city workers. And these were civilians that they were grabbing up to make them that had either from the neighborhoods or they had relatives who were in gangs, and they were supposed to go out, or ex-gang members, which is my favorite thing, that they were then supposed to go out and intervene. They would hear, they'd get a phone call. This is before the cell phone. They would get a phone call on a rotary dial phone and go, hey, there's a gang problem in Humboldt Park. You got to get out there. And they'd find the guy who was in that, you know, had been a previous chief in that gang, now out of the joint, who was going to go back and he was going to go solve the problem. Never worked. Never worked. Now, it's because, as you point out, most of the gang conflict is about the stupidest stuff you can possibly imagine.
So let me just close the circle. So that was in the 90s, Bill Clinton, Richie Daley, and me down at Beethoven Elementary. And also in the 90s, the kids in Winnetka are victimized by a crazy lady named Lori Dan, who...
shoots up in elementary school.
And a six-year-old died, right?
Yes.
A little boy died. Those kids, I'm sure all the kids exposed to that violence and the aftermath of it, most of them, I'm sure, got wonderful care. They may well now they're what, in their 40s or 50s now, they're 30s. They're all adults. Probably traumatized for life if they think about this.
Right. Spring of 1988, and these kids were 5 or 6 years old.
Is that when it was? Yeah. Okay. But they got some care. The kids down there at 50th and Federal, probably most of them didn't get any care. And I suspect a large number of them
into
trouble later.
This is a real thing. But the question is, how is that applied? You have to have parents who want to then make sure that those kids go to those, to, you know, wherever that therapy is going to be taking place. Are you going to do it in the schools? How much are they going to pay? Are they going to pay a contractor who's just ripping the city off and they don't have qualified people? Because that can happen, because all of a sudden it's an alderman's buddy or somebody who's just given a bunch of money to the alderman. That's why corruption costs lives in this city.
This is why they pay you those big bucks. Excellent questions all. And they should really double or triple your salary. Can I put an email
okay,
into
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
But look, no, those are all good points. And could the money be thrown away?
Has been for decades.
The plan of the mayor and of Charlie Beck, the interim cop, is we're going to provide these services. We're going to try to intervene one kid at a time, one potential violent offender at a time, talk them down, get them out of it, get them off that path. And in the meanwhile, we've got 10, 11, 12,000 cops deployed on the street trying to remove the guns, trying to arrest the bad guys.
What have they been doing? That's what they have been doing. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to throw cold water on this. I want to solve this as bad as any other Chicagoan has ever wanted to solve this problem. I don't want Chicago to be a laughingstock anymore. I don't want Chicago to be a shooting gallery anymore. I don't want the blood to run in the streets here that creates a problem for businesses and taxpayers to want to live in the city of Chicago and go flee to the suburbs or flee to Texas or flee to Florida or flee to wherever they're going. Tennessee, right? I would like to stem that, because Chicago is an amazing city, despite the fact that the sun's not going to come out till Thursday. It is an amazing city for at least 100 days in the summer. And it's beautiful. It's gleaming. It's got one of the largest economies in the world. It's a fifth, when the money is running through the Board of Trade, it's the fifth largest economy from 8 o'clock in the morning to 3 o'clock in the afternoon in the world. This is a place, it's got one of the great cultural landscapes. It's got some of the best cultural institutions, one of the best art museums in the world. And you're like, oh, who cares about that? And you know why? Because people from all over the world come here. As a matter of fact, in the Oscar-nominated film that is a Korean film that is nominated for Best Movie of the Year, they reference the School of the Art Institute of Chicago.
And Illinois State University.
Right.
And the family's relatives supposedly moved to Chicago. They relocated to Chicago, supposedly.
This is a world-class city. And we have craziness here. And this craziness stems from the fact that it is beyond the economics of it. It is literally gang members going out, perpetrating their gang lives, getting shot.
All right, but
wait a second, hold on. And then having kids born into that world, and then having kids exposed to that world, and then hardworking families who live in what used to be the projects or low-rise projects or low, you know, rent assistant places, and there are moms who want to bring their kids to and from someplace. They want to get them on the bus. They want to get them to school. They want to get them safe, and they can't get them safe because no matter what they try to do, there's some a-hole at the end of the block who's got a gun who's going to make sure that kid sees someone get shot.
All that said, 3 years, double-digit declines in deadly violence here, to the point where
the shootings numbers aren't that low.
I get a call from my sister yesterday. She lives in the north suburbs of Philly with her husband and kids. All over the Philadelphia newspapers, they've sent people out here to figure out how did Chicago do it? A 40% decline?
And
while
murders.
In Philly, the murders have been skyrocketing.
You know why?
They're coming here to try to... Something's going right.
I'll answer it for them. Chicago Fire Department. The shootings aren't that much lower. They're saving lives. They literally are saving the lives. All right. I wish I could solve this problem.
The shootings actually are a lot lower. They're actually double-digit down, too. But yeah, so we have a new University of Chicago emergency trauma center.
Right. That has been very helpful.
That has absolutely been helpful. But the number of total shootings is down.
Yes, but not at the same percentage that the murders are down. That's the interesting part. All right. You know what? I didn't solve this problem, but I certainly feel better having said what I said.
Tonight at 9 o'clock, Charlie Beck. You'll get to hear from him. He's only going to be here, he says, for 3 or 4 months,
oh,
but
good.
He's got big ambitions. Yeah. The safest big city in America.
If you can do that in 3 months, more power to him. I'll help him any way I can. Let's check in down the newsroom around the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Here's Kim Gordon. It's the Rokan Show on 720 WGN. He's Kevin Powell. He does the sports, and he's got thoughts. Sometimes inappropriate. She's Lauren Lapka. She's got the traffic, the weather, and she is the official fact checker of this very radio program, in case you're wondering. Is that true?
Most of the time.
Yes, okay. She's the fact checker. The CS fact checker is supposed to go yes, and then we move on. And then, of course, Kim Gordon in the newsroom, getting us all caught up. All right, we got to go back because we had a number of texts and phone calls about something that came up in the top 5 at 5, and people want more details.
About the tortoise?
No, it's not about the offensive coordinator for the Chicago Bears. I'll tell you that right now. No, this is the story of the Galapagos giant tortoise that has just been retired after the last... He's 100, by the way. 100 years old. And has spent the last 50 years of his life breeding at the San Diego Zoo's breeding program. 30 years very productively.
Mm-hmm.
He himself has sired 800 similar tortoises. And now, those 800 have sired many of those. They're responsible for about 2,000 of these tortoises that are being returned now to the Galapagos Islands.
That were near extinction.
It was an extinction. He was one of two males left in the world, on the planet Earth, when they had him started doing the thing. And apparently, he really took on to it.
Talk about getting the right guy for the job.
Yes, they did. They got a guy that was basically, if you got a guy, he's not one of those guys who's like, let's just watch Netflix.
Right.
He's not one of those guys.
Mastered the craft of breeding.
Yeah. Right. Or, I'm tired. I don't know. I can't.
No.
And just because they're slow doesn't mean they're lazy.
No. No, no, no. So the Ecuadorian Environmental Ministry announced Friday that it decided to end the 40-year captive breeding program because it's been so successful, and mostly because of this guy. How about that? I don't know what you know. What the funny thing is, they never identify him. I guess that's a privacy thing, right? Because it's because they didn't want to necessarily. He didn't want to be embarrassed when he gets back there. These things can live to be 130 years old. He's 100. They want him to live the last 30 years, and God knows what he'll do down there
in retirement.
Yeah, I think he wants to go meet a couple hundred of his offspring.
Maybe he's ready to settle down with one of them.
I'm your father.
I'm your father,
Luke. I am your father.
Yeah, but how many Lukes are there? I mean, you got to start repeating names after a few hundred.
Do you think he's gonna know? Do you think he like goes up and goes, "Oh, that looks just like me"?
You have the same eyes as me. I can tell by your shell.
His name is Diego, by the way. He told
Diego the Turtle.
Diego the Turtle, right? Because he was at the San Diego Zoo. He's been at the San Diego Zoo so long they named him Diego because they thought that was cute. So just think of it that way. How about that? You got to give it to him. So what we did is we went and we found that there's actual sound of this.
Of the breeding.
Yeah. This is like a nature show. For people who are not familiar, one of the things we do here on the Rokan show is everyone, we'd like to take you back to nature, if at all possible. It's very NPR-ish. You know, are they doing this on NPR too? Tortoise porn? Here is apparently what it sounds like for Diego. You know, I had an uncle who used to do that at the holidays, too. Okay. Sounded just like that at the table. It's not going well.
He was just dealing with digestive problems, though.
Yeah, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. Okay. There are people who people fall asleep with a sound like that. There were 12, when this guy started, there were 12 females and 2 males left on the planet Earth, they think. And this guy brought it all back. See, it just takes one.
Saved a civilization.
Save exactly what he did. Now, when he gets back down there, you think that there's going to be people asking, think some of the females are going to be like, hey, where's my dough? I've been taking care of this thing for years and years and years and years, and you've been nowhere to be found. The big star, all these other kids up in San Diego.
Breeding with all these different tortoises.
Right. And now what about me? All right. Coming up, the Chicago Bears have trust me, there is a good transition between these stories. The Chicago Bears have hired an offensive coordinator who, by the way, has not seen 1/1000th of the action that Diego has seen, because this makes no sense to me whatsoever. Our Bears insider, Adam Hogue, is going to explain why hiring the Cincinnati Bengals offensive coordinator. What are the Cincinnati Bengals this year?
They were not good, Ro.
They were not good. Thank you, Kevin. And we're getting their offensive coordinator? But what might this say about the plans for quarterback? That's the question, and we will find out the answer to that with Adam Hogue coming your way after Lauren tells us about the traffic and the weather. It's the Rokan Show on 720 WGN. All right, let us now... That's me, Rokan. Let's now talk to Adam Hogue. He's our Bears insider. He's got one of the most popular podcasts on Chicago Bears stuff on the planet Earth. And you can hear it at WGNradio.com. You can just go there and download it, or wherever fine podcasts are sold. And he joins us right now on the Super Celebrity Satellite from near Hallis Hall. I would like you to answer a question for me, because the Bears made a major move today. They have hired an offensive coordinator. However, this move is not like they are hiring an offensive coordinator. A lot of teams hire offensive coordinators from teams that have just lost in the playoffs. Right, because there's a lot of offensive coordinators from high performing teams that they're looking, or assistants that are looking to step up in the ranks. They hired an offensive coordinator from a team that had a worse record than they did.
Correct, except Bill Lazor was not on the Bengals this year. He was actually sitting out the season. It's not like the Bengals have been great in the last couple of years.
No. What? All right. So there's speculation here amongst Lauren and Kevin and myself. All we consider ourselves to be Bears insiders, although you really are a Bears insider, but we consider ourselves to be experts on this issue. That does this mean that maybe they're looking at Andy Dalton as a possible replacement or addition to the Bears quarterback roster?
It's possible. It certainly doesn't hurt, but I don't think you make an offensive coordinator hiring just based on a guy you want to bring in as a backup quarterback. It could be a small factor, but it's not like they did this just so they can land Andy Dalton. I think it has more to do with the fact that Bill Lazor has a background specifically with the RPOs, the run-pass options that Matt Nagy likes to run. Maybe he can help Mitch Trubisky run those better because that's something he struggled with this year. But also, I think he has, some history of running the football well, too. And I think that was clear with all the Bears coaches that they've hired so far on offense. Juan Castillo, Clancy Barone, the tight ends coach, has been an offensive line coach in the league. And Bill Lazor has a history of running the football well.
Well, they definitely need a new line because if you want to stop and look at the problems that the Bears had on offense, it started as all problems on offense too. It started on the offensive line. They weren't able to effectively protect Mitchell Trubisky. He didn't have enough time. They also weren't running him out of the pocket, which they should have been doing. That's a separate issue.
Yeah.
But they and also in terms of first contact for a running back coming out of the backfield, first contact was often behind the line of scrimmage. And when you have a guy like Tariq Cohen, who is a feather, right, by comparison, strong guy, no question, pound for pound, probably maybe the strongest guy on the team. But it doesn't matter if you're 160 pounds, you're 160 pounds. And a guy who's 380 is going to stop you. It's a matter of physics.
Yeah, I'm with you. I would like to see them go out and get, a legitimate road grading right guard that to replace Kyle Long that will just, run you over and get the running game going. I think that would be a huge upgrade this offseason. But I also think part of it's been the scheme. And so I actually like what Matt Nagy's done. I know people like the idea of bringing in somebody like Pat Shurmur who could come in and just call plays. I think people want to see a different play caller. I just don't think that was realistic with Matt Nagy. But what he has done here is bring in three guys who have a history of running the football. And it's also very interesting to me, Ro, that all three of these coaches that Matt Nagy has hired the last couple weeks were not coaching in 2019. Like, they all took the year off to step back, study the game, bring in new ideas, and maybe they studied the Bears very, very closely and can help Matt Nagy point to what's wrong right now.
What do you make of that? Hiring all three guys that took a year off?
Well, I gave you the positive spin right there. The negative spin, of course, is that they were not in demand possibly this past season. But that's not always the case. Sometimes guys can get jobs and they pass them up to actually take a year off. Remember, these guys are under contract a lot and they get paid
regardless to
basically not work.
Yeah.
And so that's always, I don't want to just assume until we talk to these guys what situation they were actually in. But no matter what, they almost always sit at home in their offices with film and try to become better coaches. That's what Mike McCarthy did that helped him get the Cowboys job.
Okay. All right. I am so displeased by all of this. This has been a very disruptive 6 o'clock hour for me. My emotions are all over the place.
We're looking forward to free agency, Adam. Have you begun to look at some potential targets for the Bears that would be realistic, whether it's a lineman, a tight end, or elsewhere?
Yeah, I think the realistic is the question, because how much money are they really going to have to spend? But in terms of some early names that make sense to me, like I just brought up how they need a right guard. How about Brandon Scherff, who's a really good guard, played for the Washington Redskins, is going to be a free agent, someone like that. But that's going to cost you a lot of money. So I do like that they went out and signed Eddie Jackson quickly. Like they took care of their own guy. It helps get the books right.
On the defensive side.
Yeah, obviously you weren't going to lose Eddie Jackson. You needed to pay him. You did it. You gave him what he deserves, and now you know what money you have allocated to that position right now. But
not worried about the defense. The defense is solid. They had some key injuries this year, right? I mean, you're running the 3-4, which means you got four linebackers, three down linemen, and four linebackers, and then three of the major players in that linebacker core got injured throughout the season, two of them ending their season, you know, early. So there was, there were injuries. We knew this was going to happen. We got so lucky in Matt Nagy's first year in 2018. You knew that 2019, that the statistics were going to catch up with you, and that was exactly what happened. They got key injuries. They lost Mitchell Trubisky. As much as we want to talk about how he's not perfect, at least he was mobile, right? And that's, with the exception of that game in which he got injured in the first series of downs, they were able to win that game against Detroit because we have Detroit's number. That's just our Minnesota, I should say, because we just have Minnesota's number. That's how that goes. All right, okay, before we let you go, I just need to understand something here. You're bringing in a new offensive coordinator, and Mitch Trubisky had enough. It took him 3 years to try to figure out the previous scheme, right? He had the first-year scheme under John Fox. Hey! Then you had 2 years where he had to understand what was going on under Matt Nagy's scheme, right? That was seemed to be effective with a guy named Patrick Mahomes. And now it's a whole new deal?
No. This is still going to be the same playbook. It's Matt Nagy's system. It's Matt Nagy's playbook. That's why
he's going to be calling the plays.
And he's going to be calling the plays. That's why I wouldn't overreact too much about this specific hire. What I do think these new coaches are going to do, though, is come up with some new ideas and maybe different approaches for how to run the football. And this new offensive coordinator, Bill Lazor, not only Andy Dalton, which is the obvious name, but he worked with Nick Foles in Philadelphia, and he worked with Ryan Tannehill in Miami. When Tannehill was actually decent in Miami, it was actually when Lazor left that Tannehill went downhill, and now we're starting to see in Tennessee what Ryan Tannehill can do. So those are some positives to look at, too.
Again, now, before we let you go, this Green Bay Packers team, mm-hmm. I don't want to see them in the Super Bowl. I don't want to see it. Can you tell me if you think they are going to get past the San Francisco 49ers?
I don't think they are.
All right.
You make me feel better. I will always give them a chance, though, with Aaron Rodgers, but I do think for overall 49ers are the better team.
Okay. And in the AFC, Tennessee is quite the shocker, are they not?
They are, but I think this is where it ends because I think the Chiefs have kind of been destined to go to the Super Bowl all season.
They certainly proved it yesterday, going down 24-0 in the first quarter and coming back and winning by 20 points.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said for the rust that sometimes you deal with having that week off. And obviously the Chiefs got over that very, very quickly. 7 straight touchdowns. That'll work.
Right. Unanswered.
That's hard to swallow if you're a Bears fan. The Packers won.
Okay.
Patrick Mahomes put up all those touchdowns.
Okay. And Deshaun Watson played really well, you know, up until the moment where they Kansas City defense, which is underrated. You know, everybody talks about Patrick Mahomes, but Kansas City defense is pretty great. So they didn't show in the first quarter, but they certainly came around to it. And that Green Bay is a good team. The thing is, you do have a lot of weapons on that team. And Jimmy Graham being the great tight end, future Hall of Famer tight end, being with the future Hall of Famer quarterback whose name eludes me at the moment, just because I refuse to say it ever again. Thank you and goodbye. Thank you. I don't feel better about any of this, Adam Hogue.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Sorry, Ro. But that's all right. We're going to have to go anyway.
Talk to you guys later.
All right, thanks. Bye. Adam Hogue, Bears Insider right there. Find out what Justin Coffin's got working for the show coming up right after ours, right after this. Your very own WGN. All right, as the Ro Khan show comes to an end, starring me, Ro Khan, along with Kevin Powell and Lauren Lapka and Kim Gordon. Now, Justin Coffin steps into the studio.
Ro Khan. How are you, buddy?
Don't ask. I got very emotional during the day. I don't know. It's the 6 o'clock hour. It's just got me going.
It really gets you going?
Yeah. All right. So now you're doing the movie thing again. Now where are we? The Elite Eight.
This is this week. We're doing the movie, the ultimate Chicago movie cage matches back. This week we will do the 4 matchups to get us to the final 4. Tonight, About Last Night versus The Untouchables. It is David Mamet versus David Mamet. That's the way it is set up this way.
Okay.
It's a tough one.
That is a tough one. About Last Night is really... I always think of Chicago movies as making me feel proud about the city, and mm-hmm. so About Last Night makes me feel proud because it's such a beautiful movie. The scene setting is so great.
And has pointed out as well that The Untouchables was done before CGI, so they really dressed up Chicago as 1920 Chicago to do that film. So, and if you watch The Untouchables again, a lot of great iconic Chicago shots, including the Union Station stairs.
Yes, with all the that baby carriage going down the stairs.
Really great. So it's going to be tough because this is, hey, it doesn't get easy. When you get to the Elite Eight, it's not easy.
They have an address mistake, though, in Untouchables about where the Sean Connery character...
1634 Racine.
Yeah. So I don't feel good about that. But all right. Okay, we'll see. I'm going with about... Like,